From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Son of my father's lead, length and a half. Tasegun I Dance Alone is running home well on the outside. Son of my father's been in this position before. Can this one hold today? Son of my father in front.
Boss Daddy at the rail has the lead on the curve. Now to challenge Boss Daddy on the curve. Boss Daddy holds.
Big Daddy cool. Surges home to win it by 3/4 of a length.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Dad, are we there yet? Leads by 4. King's Missile, Pap's Pell vying for that second spot, but they're 5 lengths off the leader, and the leader is the winner. Dad, are we there yet?
And it's Cool Daddy trying to see this through. They turn into the stretch. Cool Daddy still on top.
Just for Papa. Sweeps up on the outside, and Just for Papa takes the lead 3/16 out. It's Just for Papa now accelerating, drawing away by 4.
Dad in front, trying to put them away, and seems to have their measure, and is etching out a win, and Dad will finally break through. Dad by a length.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Well, an early happy Father's Day to all of the dads across HRRN Nation. Great job by my producer, Lee Delapina, putting that special open together on this Father's Day. I like the name Dad, Are We There Yet? You can just picture the kids in the back seat, right? Dad, are we there yet? Are we there yet? I got to go. Are we there yet, Dad? Great job. Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum. It is indeed right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you aboard for the next 3 hours, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And I'm going to spend plenty of time paying tribute to all of you fathers out there as we move throughout the show later this morning. But one of the newest dads in thoroughbred racing is jockey Jose Ortiz, and he's going to be with me at 9:40 Eastern. 8 days ago, Jose and his wife Taylor welcomed their third child, a son named Nicola, and Jose is going to be with me to talk about balancing his life as a top jockey while making sure he's still there to spend time with his children. Should be a great interview. If you recall, trainer Todd Pletcher joined me on my Wednesday afternoon trainer talk show about a month ago, and I asked him a very similar question, and he admits to not always being there for every event in his children's life, but he was also very quick to credit his wonderful wife, Tracy, for helping to make that a little bit easier on him and on the family. But it's something that I know if he probably had something he'd like to be able to do differently, it is probably spend more time with the kids. I can imagine that Canadian Hall of Fame trainer Robert Tiller probably feels like a proud father every time he saddles his brilliant 9-year-old Pink Lloyd, the gelding, the 7-time Sovereign Award winner, including Horse of the Year honors in 2017, and, oh, by the way, 4 straight male sprinter titles from 2017 to 2020, has now won 26 of 33 lifetime starts, and he returns in search of a 5th consecutive win in the Grade 3 Jacques Cartier Stakes for owner's Entourage Stable tomorrow at Woodbine. And Robert Tiller is going to be with me to kick off the show in just a few minutes, right around 8:15 Eastern. It was 9 days ago that jockey Gerard Melanson joined many of the greatest jockeys in the history of our sport with milestone win number 5,000. He becomes only the 37th jockey ever to accomplish that feat, and he's going to tell you all about his journey coming up at 8:35. Gerard has had to overcome many, many things in his career and in his life, and he now sits at a very high level, and I can't wait to visit with him later in this first hour. Arlington Park has been in the news, as you've probably heard, and they've been in the news quite often the past several months, but not for the reasons that all of us who were involved with racing would hope. Churchill Downs Incorporated, the current owners of Arlington, announced plans earlier this year to sell the historic track and the land that's associated with it. It's a very valuable property in Arlington Heights, Illinois. And while this certainly does appear from the outside looking in to be the swan song, the final meet at Arlington, which opened, gosh, I guess was back in the 1920s, there are a multitude of layers that are still being peeled back on this story, and there are several cards still left to play by both sides. CDI, and those who would like to save racing at Arlington Park are both kind of going through the feeling out process, if you will. CDI is accepting bids from various organizations. And as of yesterday, you can now throw one of the most iconic franchises in the NFL into the mix. The Chicago Bears saying that they may be interested in the Arlington Heights property. Yeah, the Chicago Bears talking about building a new stadium potentially in Arlington Heights. UPI racing writer Bob Kiekhafer is an Illinois native, and he's been on top of this story from the very beginning. He will join me at 9 o'clock Eastern to fill you in on the very latest. And by popular demand later this morning, the Pontiff of the Pick Four himself, Jude Feld, my longtime sidekick here on the network, will talk about today's Grade 3 San Juan Capistrano at Santa Anita, and we'll do it right around 9:20 Eastern. You know, Jude trained horses in California for so many years, and admittedly, this is quite possibly his all-time favorite race. And the San Juan Capistrano, it's not what it once was from a stature perspective in our sport. When you think about some of the great horses that have won the San Juan Capistrano over the years, it is a who's who of stars in thoroughbred racing. Remember, the race was a Grade 1 for many, many, many years. Now all the way down to a Grade 3, which is, as a racing fan, is sad to see. You like to see those races that are iconic races in our sport maintain their level of greatest stake status, but it's still the San Juan Capistrano, and I'll talk to Jude about some of his favorite memories. We'll look back on the all-time leading trainer in the history of that race, Charlie Whittingham, who won the race a remarkable 14 times. 14! Jude will talk about that. He'll talk about this year's edition, too. I'm also going to bring you this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy, and we'll take a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. All of that coming up in the third hour of today's program. And in the final segment of today's show, this is going to be kind of neat. I'm going to continue down the road to the Breeders' Cup, which is how each show, each of these equine forum shows, is going to end for you from now through the Breeders' Cup in November. The final segment of the show will be the road to the Breeders' Cup. And this morning, I'm going to look back on the three Breeders' Cup challenge races that were contested at Royal Ascot this past week. You'll hear from winning trainers John Gosden and Aidan O'Brien, along with jockeys Frankie Dettori and Paul Hannigan, who scored an emotional win this past week. He talks about it, and he is very candid in his conversation with the media after the race. You're going to hear all of that coming up in the final segment right around 10:35 Eastern time. There is still one final Breeders' Cup winning your in race at Ascot later today. The Diamond Jubilee Stakes, the winner of that race, punching their ticket to the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. So it is another very busy show on the equine forum this morning, and really looking forward to getting started with it. I guess we're already started, but looking forward to getting started with the litany of guests that you're going to hear from this morning. Question of the day, not a poll question this morning, but our question of the day on social media, at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, is this. I'd like you to share your favorite memory of being at the track with your father. Maybe you work in the industry like Mark Cassie and Norm Cassie, and they get to go down that journey together. At least they did until Norm went out on his own. Mark learned from his father. Norm learned, of course, from Mark, and it just continues to get passed down from generation to generation. There are so many people in our sport, not only at the racetrack, but on the breeding side of things, that are in a position today that's been handed down to the family from generation to generation to the generation. You know, the Claiborne farm, all the way from Bull Hancock all the way down, just comes to mind immediately. But there are so many organizations like that. So maybe your favorite memory of being at the racetrack with your father is from a betting perspective, maybe it's from a working perspective, whatever it might be. But share your favorite memory of being at the track with your father. Love to hear some of these stories, and I will try to pass them along later in the program. I'll try to read through as many as I can. You can do that on our Twitter feed, at HRRN. You can do it on Facebook, Horse Racing Radio Network. Or, if you're not a social media person, you can email the show. Email your story to me, mike@horseracingradio.net, and I will do my best to pass those along later in the program. All right, when I come back, we'll kick things off with trainer Robert Tiller talking about the ultra-talented 9-year-old Pink Lloyd. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
The Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
I'm three-time Derby winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosie Nupravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I listen to Horse Racing Radio.
Circle of Friends in front. Leads by 3 parts of a length to Pink Lloyd. Malibu Secrets had a really good run here on the inside. And last is not so quiet as they turn. And now Malibu Secret darts up on the inside. Pink Lloyd is called on the extreme outside to go. And they share the lead at the top of the stretch with Circle of Friends, and then not so quiet. Pink Lloyd has gone to the front. Malibu Secret on the inside, trying to make a race of it. Pink Lloyd by a length. Malibu Secret in second. And the Jacques Cartier for the fourth time. Pink Lloyd is just unbelievably good. Pink Lloyd by a length and a half to Malibu Secret and not so quiet. And back fourth, Circle of Friends.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. That was Robert Geller with the call of Pink Lloyd's win in the Jacques Cartier June 25th of last year. As you heard him say, a fourth consecutive win in the Jacques Cartier for the ultra-talented 9-year-old gelding Pink Lloyd. That's how his 2020 campaign began. And his trainer, Robert Tiller, the Canadian Hall of Famer, is hoping that his 2021 campaign begins in the same fashion as he gets rolling tomorrow in that Grade 3 event. And Robert is with me now here on HRRN. Robert, good morning.
Morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing very well and looking forward to seeing Pink Lloyd get back in action tomorrow. I'm sure you are, too.
Yes, we are. It's been a long wait, you know, up here in Toronto. You know, we really got hit by that virus, and you know, it's 2 years in a row we don't race till June. So it's been a long haul. So we are looking forward to get you know, the race has just started here, and we're certainly looking forward to Pink Lloyd's race. And he hasn't run in 6 months as usual, and we'll see what happens. He's like me; he's getting old. And I'm 71 and he's 9. So, you know, we're pensioners. But anyway, he's in very good order.
You know, since you brought up the fact that it has been a long wait, Jim Lawson, the CEO of Woodbine, was on this program with me last week. And one question I asked him was, Jim, how on earth have you been able to keep the horsemen happy during this pandemic and during this long delay of no racing? And he said, well, I really don't know if I have, but I have tried. And he said everybody has been so accommodating and has pulled together to work together in order to really keep things afloat and keep things on track until you can get back to racing. But Robert, it has to be welcome news to be back and to have racing back in Canada again.
Yes, it is, because, you know, Woodbine is a wonderful facility, and we have wonderful racing here. It's tough racing, not easy. You know, obviously, Woodbine wants big fields, and they're certainly getting them right now the first 4 days. They're huge fields and great betting races, and, you know, I believe our horses here at times can add up to anybody in the USA. So, I mean, we're, you know, it is very good racing, and all is well at the moment.
Even Pink Lloyd is a horse. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. Hopefully soon, right? That are they talking about stage two of the reopening process, welcoming back spectators?
Yeah, they're talking about that. We're hoping to have that within the next month or so. We can get a few people over there. You know, you miss racing without people. You need owners to – owners don't want to sit at home, and they want to be at the track, and spectators love the game, so we're looking forward to where we can get people back in a grandstand, because I think it's very necessary for the business.
Yeah, Pink Lloyd, back to Pink Lloyd for a minute here. He's a horse, Robert, that has now won 26 of 33 lifetime starts. He has career earnings of just about $1.6 million, and he is so consistent.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the fact that he is now 9 years old. How have you been able to keep this horse going at a very high level for so long?
Well, you know what? One thing I do want to just correct, John, because it always bothers me a little bit. This horse has earned $2.1 million Canadian. We run here at Woodbine under, unfortunately, in the racing form, they always give you the American money. He's never raced in the States.
Yeah.
So he has won $2.1 million Canadian. And, you know, that's how we get paid. So I think that's, you know, we get cheated there a little bit when it says 1.594 or whatever. But, you know, he's 9 years old. It's been a struggle at times. He's just an absolutely amazing horse. He really, truly is. To go and run in a race that he's got to run in, whether he wins or loses, to try and win that race 5 years in a row, you don't see that anywhere. And they've been very good fields at times. And like I said, he's won like 26 races and 23 stakes. To me, he's just I've lost words for him. He's amazing, a true icon, you know. And he loves what he does. And you know, he will be retired sometime this year, and that'll be bittersweet. You know, we'll miss him, and on the other hand, we're looking forward to it for him. Although he's not really a horse that's happy on the farm, that's one of the reasons he's racing right now. He loves the racetrack. He loves the competition.
What's his best attribute, Robert?
What is what? I'm sorry.
What's his best? Yeah, his best attribute. What's the one thing that makes Pink Lloyd just so good?
Desire, heart, huge heart, just wanting to win, loves winning. It's unbelievable. He just loves winning. At times he's had his issues with the gate, where he broke through the gate a couple of times, and he was just so eager to go. He just loves the competition. He's just really super classy, classy horse. And he carries a ton of weight every time, 126 pounds tomorrow. He's always the high weight, and he always tries.
I know he's been around for a while now, but do you remember the first time that you looked at him and you said, oh boy, we might have something special here?
Well, you know what? It's true. It's a funny thing because you mentioned that, because this horse didn't race till August of his four-year-old year. Since then, he's won 2.1 million Canadian. He's won 26 races since then. You're dealing with a horse here. You just don't find us anywhere. He's raced, I guess this is his fifth year of racing. He didn't race till August of his four-year-old year. I knew he could run as a two-year-old, but he was lame, or I'll use the word sore, on three occasions. We sent him back to the farm. He had some shin problems, some hock problems, and he just looked, you know, every time we worked him in the morning, he just wanted, if you worked him in company, all he wanted to do was go after the other horse. And he'd work black letter all the time. So we knew from the first 3/8 that we worked him that this horse got ability. We never dreamed he had this kind of ability, but we knew right off the bat. You know, horses can be morning glories. Unfortunately, I've had a few of those over the years. I ran one yesterday, to be truthful. But this horse is not a morning glory. He just wants to do it. So he's just got a lot of heart.
Talking with the Canadian Hall of Famer trainer Robert Tiller here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Pink Lloyd going for a fifth consecutive win in the Grade 3 Jacques Cartier Stakes. That'll be tomorrow at Woodbine. 4:29 Eastern is the post time for the Jacques Cartier. Make sure you're tuned into that. It is race number 7 on the program tomorrow. 6 furlongs on the turf course at Woodbine, which the synthetic.
Hold it. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I apologize. But I do got something very important tomorrow. We got a new rider on tomorrow that's never rode.
Yes, I see that.
This is something that's going to be good or bad. You know, the young fellow that won the Queen's Plate here last year, Japanese jockey, Dasuki Fukumoto.
Yep.
Unfortunately, our rider went down the spill, Mr. Hernandez, and he's got bruised ribs, so... And Eureka will win a lot of races. Eureka Rosa de Silva will win a ton of races on him. He's retired. So that's a new twist.
Does that make you a little bit nervous, Robert?
Yeah, you know what? I don't get nervous anymore with this horse. Of course. But what can you do? We went for the best available rider here, in our opinion. I've had him win a lot of races with this young fellow the last 2 years, so. It makes me a little nervous, definitely. You don't know the horse, but it is what it is, as they say.
Yeah, he's a very good rider, and I'm sure that Pink Lloyd will be in very good hands. Robert, I mentioned earlier that you have to be, considering the fact that this is Father's Day weekend, you have to be like a proud parent when you have a horse like this that you work so hard. You mentioned he didn't start till his four-year-old season. You have to be like a proud parent when you look down the shed row and you look at Pink Lloyd.
We are very, very proud of this horse. You know, I hate to say this, but because I am getting old, so I'm 71, but 30 years ago, he'd have been on the front page of the newspaper here in Toronto, the Toronto Star, of the sports section. He would have been on the front page. Unfortunately, horse racing now, they're not into the newspapers anymore. It's a different world. But he's had a lot of press. He's had... he's had a lot of people interested in him as far away as California. He has had a lot of backing from a lot of nice people, and I've received cards and letters and that sort of thing. So, we're very, very proud of this horse. And whether he wins or loses tomorrow, he's had a tremendous career. And there'll never be another one here, a sprinter here, certainly at Woodbine like him.
No, I would certainly agree with that. He's very, very special. Has a pretty cool name, too. It's very catchy.
Yeah, the Pink Floyd was the rock band, And Pink Lloyd is, you know what, the owners are involved in this Entourage people. They're, you know, I'm not quite up on that Pink Lloyd thing, but I just know, I certainly remember Pink Floyd.
Yeah, and Pink Lloyd has now become a rock star in his own right. And Robert, yes. You mentioned he would be retired at some point later this season. Are there any thoughts of maybe taking this horse and pointing him for a race, like let's say the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint? Would that ever be a possibility?
Well, you know, it's a great question. I've had that asked for about 3 years in a row. In a business sense, it wouldn't work. It would cost us about $300,000 to run in the 250,000-300,000 Canadian or something like that to run in the Breeders' Cup. He was not nominated as a yearling.
Yeah. Well, let's so see if
that
he
would
get,
not be a good business decision.
Yeah, it wouldn't make a lot of sense. But he's a horse that
not as a 9 year old anyway. If we did that, we probably should have done it when he was younger. So. And you know what? He's really not a good shipper. He's got a stall there that's padded in rubber right to the top of the ceiling almost all the way around because he likes to kick. So really, we're happy with what he's done, and I can't see that happening.
Well, Robert, listen, all the best tomorrow in the Jacques Cartier. Let's go get number 5, and let's get this 9-year-old campaign kicked off in the right way. Hopefully he adds to that $2.1 million Canadian that he already has in the bank.
Yes. You know, I appreciate that. I think he'll run big. And, you know, again, it's sad, you know, in a way that this is towards the end of his career, but I would love to see him go out a winner and run huge. And I think he will really run big.
Yeah. Good luck to Pink Lloyd. Good luck to Robert Tiller, to Entourage Stable, the owner, and to the new rider who will be aboard Pink Lloyd tomorrow, Daisuke Fukumoto. Really appreciate it, Robert, and good luck tomorrow.
You pronounce it better than me. You pronounce that name better than me. I've had a lot of trouble with it. Anyway, thank you.
Appreciate it, buddy. Thanks so much, Robert. Good luck. Robert Tiller here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Fantastic. Such a nice guy, and you can tell his passion, not just for Pink Lloyd, but for the sport comes through when you get a chance to visit with him. I talked with him yesterday asking him to join me on the program, and it was so much fun just to catch up with him off air. Really, really nice guy. One heck of a trainer. Again, Canadian Hall of Famer. And let's hope that Pink Lloyd can capture that 5th consecutive Jacques Cartier Stakes tomorrow. Again, race 7, 4:29 Eastern is the post. When I come back, you're going to hear from jockey Gerard Melanson looking back on win number 5,000, which took place 9 days ago. It's a special moment for him. His story is spectacular. That's why he's going to be this week's Industry Star of the Week. But first, it is time for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus of Lexington folks. They are so good. They do such great work, and I encourage you to go see them on the corner of New Circle and Liberty if you're in the market for a new or pre-owned vehicle. They will take care of you. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
He was the son of Forley out of Lady Golconda by Hasty Road and was foaled in 1970, the same year as Secretariat. But while Secretariat began showing championship mettle as soon as he began to train, this horse was very rapidly acquiring a marked reputation as an unmanageable rogue. He was a huge colt who very early on displayed an ungentlemanly interest in fillies. Further, he had the dangerous and painful habit of savaging any individual who dared come close enough to him. His owners, the Lazy F Ranch, had him gelded to try to correct a problem, and though that surgical process made him at least trainable, he never got to the racetrack till he was 3. He broke his maiden in his second start and had second-place finishes in the Hutchinson Stakes and the Florida Derby. But he ran a distant 4th while priced at 28-1 to Secretariat in that colt's record-smashing win in the Kentucky Derby. This horse came into his own in his sophomore season on the track in the fall, with convincing scores in the Roamer and the Discovery Handicaps at Aqueduct, and that, as the saying goes, was the start of something big indeed. At 4, his star shone brightly in the heavens of thoroughbred racing. He began that campaign with 4 straight wins. He was a strikingly handsome, huge bay, standing 17-plus hands, and one could easily pick him out of a crowd of horses at any distance. He did have a gift, A gift for the crowd-pleasing late charge had made him very popular with the public, and horsemen were awed by his incredible versatility. At the conclusion of his four-year-old campaign, he won the 12-furlong Woodward by a neck, and 3 weeks later came back to soundly whip the nation's premier sprinters and the 7-furlong Vosburgh handicap, winning it by three. And just 3 weeks after that, he rolled to a devastating win over a solid field of 9 distance horses in the grueling 2-mile Jockey Club Gold Cup. In that year of 1974, he won 3 Eclipse Awards, Best Older Horse or Gelding, Best Sprinter, and Horse of the Year. He followed that year with 2 other scores as Horse of the Year, both in 1975 and 1976. In both those years, he won 2 legs of the Handicap Triple Crown. The second year, just missing the triple and losing by a heartbreaking nose to Foolish Pleasure in the Suburban. His 1976 campaign as final on the racetrack found him chalking up one of the most remarkable victories in the chronicled annals of racing in the Marlborough Cup. Honest Pleasure was in receipt of 18 pounds from this horse, who was burdened with a weighty impost of 137 pounds. Honest Pleasure moved out to what appeared to be an insurmountable lead in that 10-furlong test. At the top of the stretch, you couldn't find our horse of the day with a proverbial searchlight. But on a sloppy track, Bill Shoemaker turned him loose and he gobbled up huge chunks of real estate in an absolutely breathtaking run that made him appear as though literally shot from a cannon. He got up to win it in the very last stride by a head in a heart-stopping charge to the wire. He was finally forced into retirement by a bad ankle, but not before he had answered the call to post 57 times and winning 34 of those and being in the money on 50 of those occasions. 50 for 57 in the money. Remarkable. That great thoroughbred who turned from rogue to champion and was, in every sense of the word, a people's horse was for go.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Pin Oak Studs Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by 5 black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in 6 Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
Fans, don't miss the final 2 days of Santa Anita's Winter Spring Meet this Saturday and Sunday. With just 2 days to go, we'll have 4 stakes each day. On Saturday, the 81st running of the Grade 3 $100,000 San Juan Campestrano, which will be contested at a mile and 3/4 on turf, will be accompanied by the $150,000 Snow Chief, the $150,000 Malaire, and the $75,000 Siren Lure. Don't miss a minute of the action. Make your reservations now at santaanita.com/open. On closing day Sunday, we'll have mandatory payouts in all exotic wagers, including the 20-cent Rainbow Pick 6 jackpot, and we'll have 4 outstanding stakes, the Grade 3 Wilshire, the Grade 3 American, and a pair of $100,000 stakes for 2-year-olds at 5 furlongs, the Fassick Tipton Debutante and the Fassick Tipton Futurity. First race post time on Saturday and Sunday will be at 1 o'clock, Santa Anita. Great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
This is Steve Asmussen. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're at the top of the lane. Reposado is the leader. Dalesbro tracking intently to the outside. Now here is Prince Carlos with a 3-wide move. Reposado is the leader. Dale's little bro is second. Prince Carlos to the outside. But they're at the 16th pole. And welcome to the club, G-Money, Mr. 5000. It's Reposado. Dale's little bro was second. Clever Prince was third.
Oh, welcome to the club indeed, jockey Gerard Milan-san. Earning win number 5,000, that came 9 days ago at Evangeline Downs. Reposado the horse, and what a special moment it was for Gerard and for his family. Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, here with you right up until 11 a.m. Eastern once again this morning. And because of the fact that Gerard Milan-san has always been regarded as one of the hardest-working, classiest jockeys in the business, I thought it was appropriate, considering the feat that he has just accomplished, to honor Gerard as this week's Industry Star of the Week here on the show. And this segment brought to you every week by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. Stuart knows that his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years that include Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, and recent 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gal and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the major sales across the country. Well, Gerard is with me now, and boy, what a moment that was, and a trip down memory lane for him with that rejoin, that stretch call. Gerard, first of all, congratulations, my friend, and thanks for taking some time.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
You know, most jockeys will go out and they'll celebrate an accomplishment like this in different ways. You chose to go ahead and get a root canal to celebrate. What's up with that, brother?
Yeah, I tell you, man. I had a tooth bother me, and all of my teeth are ground, and I didn't know it can decay underneath their crown, but it's very rare, but it happened to me.
Yeah, well, listen, what an accomplishment this was. You become just the 37th jockey in North America ever to enter the 5,000 Victory Club, and what a club it is. Russell Bays, Lafitte Pinkai Jr., Bill Shoemaker, Pat Day, Chris McCarron, Edgar Prado, Angel Cordero Jr., just to name a few, and now Gerard Milan-san. Amazing.
Yeah, that's really special, I tell you. I'm very excited. It was hard to get there, but God's been good to us. Really has.
When you finally crossed the finish line aboard Reposado and realized you finally did it, what was that moment like?
Well, it was a relief. It really was, you know. Because, you know, in horse racing, I mean, this could have drug on forever, you know. But I'm fortunate. I ride good horses, and I was expecting it to happen soon. I got a really good agent, and he gets me mounted very well. But I was expected for it to happen soon, you know. But I was very grateful. I'm very grateful for it happening tonight. I had my whole family. My grandkids were both there. My mom, my sister, my brother, my wife. Everybody was there to celebrate. And so I didn't have to keep dragging him out there every night, you know, over and over for a week, because he could have drug on anyhow, you know. Could have drug on for a long time, you know, horse racing.
Well, it didn't. You put an end to it and got over that milestone, and that you can now put it in the rearview mirror and look toward, I don't know, what, 6,000? Is that next?
I don't know, Mike. That's a lot. That's a lot of wins. I mean, I'm 54. I don't ride as many as I used to. You know, the last few years I've been averaging 100 wins a year. Maybe we'll shoot for 5,500, you know.
What year did you win your first race, Gerard?
My first race?
Yeah.
1984. February 9th, 1984.
Wow. Where was that?
Delta Downs.
I'm sure at that point, Yeah, I'm sure at that point you'd never imagine you'd be sitting here talking about winning 5,000 races.
No, not at all. Not at all.
What's been the key to reaching this milestone? What's the key for any jockey that gets to 5,000?
Well, my biggest keys is right there sitting in the recliner, my wife, listening to us. She's been one of the main reasons I've done so good, because, you know, we've been through a lot in our younger age, and when we were first together for a long time, we got through the ups and downs together, and that's been my number one key. You know, a good agent is another key, and hard work and dedication and getting along with everybody, and not burning no bridges. You know, you have to, if you can't make people like you, well, I guess it's hard, you're a hard sell, you know. Like I tell my sons,
You
know,
you mentioned
something good about somebody, don't go around saying nothing bad about them. Don't say nothing bad about nobody. And be kind, be nice. Keep God first in your life.
Well, I think every other jockey that you would talk to would speak very highly of Gerard Melanson. I know your peers think a lot of you, and that has to mean a lot for you too, doesn't it?
Yes, sir. Yeah. I get along with most all the riders. I've been a Gil rep here for probably 25 years. And when there's a problem, they come to me and we try to get it fixed. And, you know, whether it's a track or something on the backside, or doesn't matter what, I'm always there to help.
Now that you're in the position that you are, Gerard, and you're a veteran rider, you mentioned you're part of the Guild, do you view yourself as more of a, let's call it a ambassador for the sport, and more of a father figure and a mentor to some of the younger jockeys that are coming up?
Absolutely. Oh, yes. Yes, sir, absolutely. When I see young riders, I don't mind helping them. Matter of fact, Mitchell Morrell is one of my success stories. You know, Mitchell came riding a horse at Avanza one night, and I seen him as a good-looking young guy, short and stocky, and I went and started talking to him, and I said, where you from? He said, I'm from Alabama. So he's coming to ride a maiden. He had a big old duffel bag with his sack. I said, how long you been riding? He said, 2 years. I said, you win any races? He says, I win one quarter horse race. I said, how much you weigh? He says, about 120. So we talked through the night he was riding the last race, and anyhow, I talked him into quitting his job. He was making 500 a week galloping horses on the farm in Alabama. And I told him, look, you can come talk to your mom and daddy, and you can move in with us. I'm going to get you an agent. I'm going to show you how to keep your weight down, and I'm going to show you how to ride. And he came in, and it was like in July, like 6 years ago. I believe it's 6 years. And he came in July, and in 3 months he won 46 races, and the rest is history. You know, he's a successful little rider. He won state races, and he's won several hundred races so far. And I'm very proud of that, you know. My son Jansen is doing very well. He's riding at Prairie Meadows in Iowa right now. He decided to go at the last minute, but his business is good, and he won a couple yeses last night. And he won a few last week, and you got to have opportunities, you know. And like I said earlier, you know, if the trainers and owners like you, they're going to ride you. They're going to give you an opportunity, you know. And, you know, you just have to make the best of it. But definitely a lot of them come up to me and question me, different, you know, all kinds of questions. But I'm always there to help if possible.
Yeah. Yeah, great stuff. Visiting with the man that they call G-Money, Gerard Melanson here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, fresh off of career win number 5,000, becoming just the 37th jockey ever to reach that mark in the history of North American racing. That is quite an honor. He is now at 5,005, by the way. He's won five more races since winning that milestone just about nine nights ago. Gerard, you mentioned your son Jansen. You were talking about how well he's doing. You have two boys. You have Jonas and Jansen. Jansen, the older of the two, he's the jockey. Jonas works in sales. You have to be so proud of both of those boys.
Yes, very much, very much. Two wonderful kids, and their mom did a good job raising them. But he's very polite, I get a lot of compliments from other people about them. I really do, and it's a good feeling. You know, we taught them both to respect the elders and respect everybody and work hard. And we taught them how to pray, how to eat right, and everything. And me and my wife are very blessed to have two great boys like that.
You and your wife, Annette, have been together a very long time since you started dating at the age of, I guess, what, 15? You were just kids, and now here you are with the two sons, and we talked about the fact that she has been by your side throughout many ups and many downs, and you've shared the highs, you have shared the lows, too, and she has pretty much carried you through a lot of those lows. Talk a little bit about some of the things that the two of you have been through together along this journey.
Well, several rehabs, you know. I've been to rehab from 18 to 22 of with like five times. She stuck by my side, and it was getting to where she had enough, and I'm fortunate, you know. None of my kids never seen me drinking and drunk, and Jansen was a year old when I quit. And she stuck with me through a lot. She really has. Now we get along. We get along pretty good. We sit and talk. And since the phones come out, I got to watch myself on the phone. Because when when you're reading Twitter or you're reading something on the phone and she's trying to get your attention, it aggravates you. So I got to turn my phone down and give her some her time, you know. It's the simple things in life, you know.
Yes. Spoken like many of the married guys, myself included out there, Gerard. I understand where you're coming from there. There's no doubt about it. Talk about some of the other people that have helped you along the way in this quest to reach number 5,000 here.
My agent, Louis Coco. We've been together probably 25 years in my career. He's helped me a tremendous amount. Louis is always giving you good information. He doesn't say negative things. You know, he's a joking clown because we're good friends. But he's always, he doesn't fill you up with bad news, you know. Well, this guy fired us. He didn't like this ride or, you know, what you were doing on this horse, and nothing negative, you know. If I do something or said something to somebody that he doesn't like, you know, he lets me know, you know. But because I'm hard on myself, and in a lot of races I get frustrated. Especially when a young rider bothers you and gets in your way or does something. Which most of them are younger than me anyhow, so it's always a young rider that gets me. But, you know, the competitiveness in the game. They said, it's me getting in the jock's room. You know, I'm kind of a different person, I guess. I'm not saying I'm bipolar, but Paula Smarquez is one of my good friends, and he tells me one time, if you draw, he said, well, come here. See how you're so nice. We go to the mall shopping, all of us, and you're so nice. You come eat at my house, and you're so nice. He says, you get in the jock's room, and you're an animal. He says, what's the matter? I just get caught up in the business, I guess, wanting to win.
Yeah, it's you know, it's a matter of putting that game face on. Mike Smith has told me, you know, similar things, that the one thing that keeps him going now, even at his age, is that desire to still win and still compete with the young kids, and he's doing it, and you are too.
Yes, sir. Yep.
That's great.
I mean, a lot of it got easier, you know, but still, it's a tough game, and it's like you said, it's hard to compete with them young kids, you know. They ride strong, they're aggressive, and you know, you have to kind of be the same way too, you know.
You know, Gerard, I was getting ready for the show, and I read an article that was written about you by Pete Monaco in the Spectrum, and he had a picture at the top of the article. It was you posing with a young child by the name of Dylan Kirkhoff outside of a restaurant. Tell me about Dylan and that relationship. I think that's pretty cool.
Well, I've been following Dylan on Twitter for several years, and I finally got to meet him at Remington Park. I went riding the Governor's Cup a couple of years ago and got to meet him. And Peter Monaco wrote a wonderful story, probably the best story ever written about me. I mean, he's really, really good. And I met Dylan and his mom and dad, and I'd read up about the story about him, how horse racing woke him up, you know, because he's like autistic and he's like dwarfism. And he never would talk until they brought him to the horse races at a young age. And I won the race that night, and I made sure they came take a picture, and I gave him they give the jockey, the trainer, and the owner each a trophy. And I gave him my trophy, and they made it seem like a big thing for me to give him the trophy, but it was nothing for me, I mean, to give that away. And actually, they rode down here last summer and spent a couple of days with us, and me and Dylan, we rode my ponies, and we rode the go-kart, the gator, took them to my pond. We had a really good time, and his mom and dad was really excited. We have an Airbnb in our backyard in the barn, and we have 10 acres, and we have an Airbnb, and we let them stay there for nothing, and they stayed a couple of days with us, and we took them uptown, eat Buddha and cracklings and everything, and we really enjoyed our day. We had a wonderful time. Actually, 2 days.
Wonderful story, and a wonderful person is Gerard Melanson, and he is with me now on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Gerard, before I let you go, and I do have to get to a commercial break, but this is Father's Day weekend, and you talked about your sons, and you talked about riding alongside Jansen and seeing him develop as a jockey now. And Jansen had a quote in that very same article in the Spectrum, which I thought was fantastic. He said, being able to ride next to one of the greatest legends to come out of Louisiana is awesome from anyone's point of view, but to ride next to your idol, teacher, mentor, and dad, well, there just aren't any words to describe the feeling. So happy Father's Day, my friend. You've done well.
Thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate it.
All right, Gerard Melanson here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. All the best and safe trip every time he gets a leg up. Fantastic story with not just his son and his wife and the addiction. And Gerard has been open about talking about the rehabs that he's gone through, and the fact that his sons have never seen him take a drink, have never seen him stumble around drunk. And that is one of the things that he is so proud of, and you can hear it in that interview. And the story he told of Dylan Kirkhoff, the young autistic child who became friends with him on Twitter. And then he got to meet him at the races and giving him the trophy and welcoming him to his home. Gerard Melanson is just a fantastic story. Congratulations to him on all of his success. I wanted to make sure that I got a chance to recognize him as the industry star of the week, and that segment presented every week by my good friend Stuart Morris. Going to get to another break. I'll come back with today's first bet and a look ahead to hour number two. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti is off to a strong start at stud. A leading sire amongst his crop by percentage of stakes horses, top runners by Caraconti include greatest stakes winners Kenzai Warrior.
But Kenzai Warrior is sticking his head down and getting up. Kenzai Warrior wins the Horace Hill.
Sole Volante.
On the outside, Sole Volante runs by the leader. It's Sole Volante in front and going away.
Two-year-old stakes winner Spanish Love Affair.
16th to go, Spanish Love Affair almost home. Spanish Love Affair lives up to the hype and wins it 1-2.
And dual surface dynamo, Princess Grace.
16th to go, Princess Grace still in front. Pasta Plate is trying hard, but she's second to Princess Grace, streaking under the wire, the three-length winner.
A rising star with greatest stakes winners on both dirt and turf, Caraconti, standing at Gainsway.
Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonySteaksAndSeafood.com.
I want to get back to being in my community group.
I want to continue having a soccer season.
So I can throw parties again. So I can go to her parties.
It'd really be nice to dine in instead of getting delivery for a change.
So I can feel safe and protected for myself and my students.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, comes to you every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern here on HRRN. Bobby Newman joins me for racing from tracks like Churchill Downs, Belmont Park, and Santa Anita. We'll also bring you interviews with all of the players, both big and small, in thoroughbred racing. You can tune in to Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live on your home for all of racing's biggest events at horseracingradio.net.
This is Elliot Walden, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Here they come, spinning out of the turn. The first has it now by two lengths. Madam Gay driving strongly in second. Kita Katen comes back along the rail. Here's John Henry closing ground, followed by Match the Hedge. The Bart under a heavy whip. John Henry is charging. John Henry on the outside. The Bart down along the rail. Madam Gay. The Bart digs in under the whip. And the final move by John Henry. The Bart is still there. Can split him, but Bart. Or is it John Henry on the outside? We know Madam Gay was third. Awfully close. The Bart clinging tenaciously along the rail. John Henry running strongly on the outside. This one can go either way.
Now the great Phil Georgeff. How about that? 1981 Arlington Million. John Henry holding off the Bart in that thrilling battle in the Arlington Million that year. That was the first Arlington Million. Might this year be the final Arlington Million in Arlington Heights, Illinois? Well, that still remains to be seen. Churchill Downs Incorporated announcing that they would sell the racetrack and the property on which it sits, but there are organizations involved that are trying to buy Arlington Park from Churchill and maintain racing there, even if it's not in the same capacity. Maybe it's a shorter boutique type of meet, but they're trying to allow racing to survive at that gorgeous facility in Arlington Heights, Illinois. And I'm going to be joined by UPI racing writer Bob Kiekeffer coming up in just a few minutes, right around 9 o'clock Eastern. It'll be just a few minutes after that, and we'll talk about the situation. He'll provide the latest updates on what's happening there. But it is time now to help you pick a winner this morning, and we do that with today's first bet.
And now, today's first bet.
And your first bet for today comes in Pimlico's eighth race with a post time of 4:17 Eastern. It is number 5, No Chance Given, 5-2 on the morning line, who has a 29% first bet win projection, rates 15 points higher than the next closest competitor, ranks top 2 in 10 of the 15 most important first bet handicapping factors for this race, takes a mile class drop in her second start since Claudio Gonzalez claimed her, and is 5-for-6 in the Superfecta lifetime. Race 8 is also part of the $1 million plus Rainbow Six jackpot carryover sequence. It is number 5, No Chance Given, in Race 8 at Pimlico, who is today's first bet. I'm back in 60 seconds right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number 1, st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Well, hour number 2 comes up next. It includes Bob Kiekeffer talking about the situation at Arlington Park. It includes the pontiff of the pick four, Jude Feld, looking at today's San Juan Capistrano in Santa Anita. And it includes Jose Ortiz talking about balancing life as a top jockey and trying to be there for his three children as well as a father. We'll talk to him coming up at 9:40 Eastern time. In honor of Father's Day, the poll question on our Twitter feed, at HRRN, and on Facebook, Horse Racing Radio Network, is this. In honor of Father's Day tomorrow, share your favorite memory of being at the track with your father. Some great responses coming in. If you haven't, if you don't have social media and you want to email the show, you can do that too, mike@horseracingradio.net. I'm going to spend time reading through some of those for you later in the program, so keep them coming, and I'll try to get to as many as I can. When I come back, it is time for hour 2 of 3. Busy show this morning. Back with hour 2 right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, with this week's HRRN Racing Update. Wesley Ward recorded the 12th win of his training career at Royal Ascot this week at their prestigious meet when Campanel, a winner there last year, was put up via protest, otherwise known as disqualification, after being herded through the stretch on Friday. An infraction that normally goes unnoticed here in the U.S. gave Ward his dozenth win at the most prestigious meet in all of Europe as the U.S. Raider, a long way behind record setter Aidan O'Brien with 75, has still amassed a pretty impressive run at Royal Ascot, which wraps up its 5-day stint later on this morning. In U.S. news, 3-year-old filly champ Swiss Skydiver spending some time up at Saratoga getting ready for a couple of tilts in the Grade 3 Shuvi and the Grade 1 Personal Ensign. The Personal Ensign, a winning you're in for the Breeders' Cup Distaff this fall at Del Mar, the ultimate goal for Swiss Skydiver. That's your HRRN Racing Update. Now let's send it back to host Mike Penna for Hour 2 of the Equine Forum.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you, rolling on this Saturday morning, the 19th day of June 2021, officially Juneteenth. Here today, happy to have you aboard for hour 2 of 3, and Welcoming now Bob Kiekeffer, the UPI racing writer who has been on top of the situation at Arlington Park. I laid it out for you in the first half of the program, but essentially Churchill Downs Incorporated, the owners of Arlington, announced earlier this year plans to sell that historic racetrack and the land on which it sits. And now we have a new player in the game. As of this week, it sounds like one of the iconic franchises in the NFL could be, well, bearing down on Arlington Heights, Illinois as a location for a new stadium. Bob Kiekeffer has the latest. Bob, welcome, my friend.
Thank you very much, bearing down.
Is this legit?
How much more of this I can bear, Mike?
Well, we could go on and on, couldn't we?
We probably will.
Is this legit?
Well, it depends how you define legit, I guess. The Chicago Bears have a lease at Soldier Field that runs through 2033. The thing was rebuilt about 12 years ago from the ground up, basically. It's not ideal for them because it's not really, you know, it's the smallest stadium in the NFL, I believe. And the traffic getting in and out of it on a football Sunday is pretty awful. And so, but, you know, they would love to have a nicer place to play football. But I think the general consensus is that they would love to have a nicer place to play football on the lakeshore in Chicago than in Arlington Heights. They have a history, Mike, of using a proposed move to Arlington Heights as a lever to get the city to grant them concessions for their lease in Chicago. This goes all the way back to the 1970s when Mayor Richard J. Daley, old Mayor Daley, got apoplectic the first time that the Bears suggested moving out of town. And they said if they ever moved to Arlington Heights, they'd have to be called the Arlington Heights Chicago, the Bears, not the Chicago Bears. So the question is, are they serious or is this just something that's forced the city to give them something they want? I think if you look at the overall scheme of things, you know, what do they have a plan to build a new stadium? Do they have a design? They haven't showed one. How long would it take them to do this? How much are they willing to pay for some land that they'd be sitting on for years before they could ever actually do anything with it? What kind of development could they build around a stadium? My first thought is, and my second and third thoughts are, the Bears in Arlington Heights would be a pretty long shot. Now, that's not the real question, though, is it? What's the real question? You know, can Churchill Downs sell this land?
Yeah.
A lot of people seem to think that they're not, that whatever the Bears are bidding, who knows what that is, that whatever they're bidding, there may not be a bid that meets Churchill Downs' minimum, so to speak, reserve not attained. And they might have to hang on to it. It's so much of it's up in the air. The only other bid we know about is one that was submitted by Roy Arnold, who was the president of Arlington back in the day. And he's put together a group that includes the Illinois Thoroughbred Horsemen Association. They want to buy the land, keep the track up running, and use a lot of the unused portion of the property to do some development. We can talk about how that would work for as long as you want to, but that's where they stand. As far as we know for sure, there are only two bids. Those are the only two we know of. People say there are more. No one's really hinted at who they might be. Meanwhile, there we sit. I travel around the world going to racetracks, and I've never seen one anywhere more beautiful than Arlington. And I see bulldozers poised outside the gates now. It's a sad situation.
Yeah, and it's one of the more pristine racetracks that you'll go to, not just here in the United States, but anywhere in the world. It's so spectacular, and it would certainly be a loss, not just for racing in the state of Illinois, Bob, but for racing as a whole. To lose Arlington Park and the history and the beauty that it represents and possesses, it would just be devastating.
Well, that's right. I mean, it was the first track in the United States, well, not the first. I mean, you know, there have been other international races in the U.S., the UN and a few others. But the owners before Dick Duchossois came up with the idea of the Arlington Million, and they created the first million-dollar thoroughbred horse race on the turf with the idea that it would become an international race. And Duchossois really poured his heart and soul into that. He put Arlington on the map internationally. To this day, I mean, today as we sit here, there are people still interested in Europe in sending horses to Arlington for the reduced Arlington Million program this year because they like Arlington that much. It really did raise the visibility of U.S. racing worldwide and has maintained that at a very high level all these 35 years. So it's beautiful. You've been there, Mike. We've sat there in the paddock during the Arlington Million Day. And you know, trees and flowers and the beautiful balconies. And I have a picture of Cigar parading around in that walking ring before his citation challenge. I don't know.
Well, the ball is in Churchill's court, CDI's court, because they can accept or not accept any of the offers that they get, including the offer from Roy Arnold and his group, the former president of Arlington Park, and Mike Campbell, the president of the Horsemen's Group in Illinois, had a quote in an article that was published in the TDN by Bill Finley this past week, and he said Churchill has two ways of going. He said they can reject this offer, but if they do, it brings up all sorts of issues about antitrust allegations that are currently floating around that the Attorney General may be looking at. So there are several layers still yet to be peeled back, aren't there, Bob?
Yes, there are. And you know, the issue of antitrust is something that they floated a couple of weeks ago and sent to the AG's office. As far as I know, the Attorney General hasn't seized that bait yet. There was another suggestion from former Governor Jim Edgar, who is a breeder and owner, that our current governor, J.B. Pritzker, could use his influence with Churchill Downs Incorporated by threatening their casino license applications in Illinois if they don't do something that we'd like to see happen at Arlington. Pritzker hasn't bitten on that either. So, you know, I think the odds are that all of that stuff is good talk, but it's going to come down to a financial decision by Churchill Downs Incorporated on behalf of their investors as to what's best for them. It's going to be dollars and cents. And this is not, as far as I can see, a good time to be selling a parcel of land like that. If it were houses, maybe so. But I think it's entirely possible they won't get a bid that they're going to consider to be acceptable. And then what? You know, that truly opens up a whole other can of worms.
Yeah, where does it go from there? If indeed they don't get a bid that they feel is acceptable, where does it go from there?
Well, here's the way I would see that playing out. For one thing, this is a little complicated, but whoever runs that track is entitled to what we in Illinois call recapture, which is money that's taken by the track from the purse account, in theory, to compensate the track for revenue loss due to the advent of full-card simulcasting. It's way complicated. The horsemen hate it with good reason. But it amounts to about $4 million a year off the top. So that's sitting out there. If Arlington or if Churchill Downs were to keep the track, keep the property, and apply for racing dates for 2022 and be granted the racing dates, they'd be entitled to that $4 million. I don't think they're losing money at Arlington, given the structure up there and what they've done to cut back on expenses. So, maybe they keep it running for another year. Maybe they keep it running for another couple of years. And here's something else. People say, well, the Illinois Racing Board would never, ever give Churchill Downs Incorporated a license to run again after the way they've treated Illinois. But there's a complication there. If Arlington's closed next year, and Hawthorne is the only race course in the Chicago area running, then the thoroughbred horsemen and the standardbred horsemen have to compete for racing dates at Hawthorne. And that means that we'd only have a partial season for thoroughbred racing, and that's not going to work. So something has to be done to provide – well, we have to build a new track for the harness racing before this situation can be fully resolved. And that, in typical Illinois fashion, the new harness track is all tied up in all kinds of political considerations too. So, you know, I can see a scenario fairly easily where – Arlington still runs next year.
UPI racing writer Bob Kiekhoffer with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network talking about the situation surrounding Arlington Park in Arlington Heights, Illinois. And as Bob just stated, there is certainly a scenario where Arlington could continue to run into 2022 and throughout that season, and then we'll see where things go from there. So Bob, what's the next steps now? Is it just a waiting game to see what Churchill decides to do?
That's right. They have not set a timetable. They've mentioned a couple of weeks, but it's purely up to them. I think they have an investor call again in July, and I would think that they'd have to provide an update at that point. So maybe we'll know by next month.
And there is no set deadline that has to be met to make this decision.
The only deadline would be if there were a scenario playing out where they wanted to race there next year. They have to apply for racing dates by late August, I think it is, and the dates are awarded at the September Racing Board meeting. So it'll be by the end of the summer that we should know something.
Let's hope it all gets resolved.
Here's something else. You know, the horsemen want to preserve Arlington for racing, but there's a kind of a dilemma for them in that there's no way that the horsemen, if they bought Arlington, no realistic way that they'd be able to get a casino license for Arlington. So they'd have to run the place based on the revenue that they can get from racing. And I don't think anybody, I mean, I talked to Chris Block about this, and Chris is one of the real voices of reason in the Horsemen's Association. And I said, you know, really, without casino revenue, there's no way that Arlington is going to be able to run for more than $120,000, $150,000 a day. And if we built a new harness track and raced thoroughbreds year-round at Hawthorne with a casino, which is being built, you could run for three times that amount of money. So what is the real, I mean, what's the, you know, what do the horsemen want? Do they want triple the purses, or do they want to maintain the mystique that is Arlington? What's in their best interest? And he said, yeah, he said, that's the scenario I laid out to the organization. What do we really want?
Yeah. As I said, so many different layers to this story and so many cards still yet to be played. And many of those are held by Churchill Downs, but the folks on the other side hold a few cards too. Bob, listen, really appreciate the visit. I know we were going to try and talk about Royal Ascot, but we haven't. I have to get to a commercial break, so we've run out of time. But go back. I know you're watching it. Go back and enjoy the final day of the Ascot meet. It has been fun.
Mike, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Do it again soon, okay?
Yeah, you got it. Bob Kiekhoffer, UPI racing writer here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Great stuff. Great insight into what's happening at Arlington. And we'll try to bring Bob back on as more developments occur. He has been following the situation from the very beginning. He's been following it for years, but certainly from the very beginning here in 2021. Going to get to a break. When I come back, we'll turn our attention to the Pontiff of the Pick Four as he talks about today's San Juan Capistrano and talks about the history of that race, which is truly spectacular. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Broken Vow, a top 15 lifetime active sire with over 170 black type horses, 90 black type winners, and approaching $80 million in progeny earnings. In 2020, Broken Vow produced Saratoga Springs winner Stan the Man and the Speedy M. Primus, winner of the $700,000 turf sprint. Juvenile stakes horses include the Grass is Blue and Chasing Kara. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Spring Meet is back at Churchill Downs with live racing now through June 26th. And new this year, Stephen Foster Day has moved to a daytime card with seven total stakes races that include the Breeders' Cup Winning Your In Fleur de Lis for the Distaff Division and the Stephen Foster for the Classic Division. Churchill also has Twilight Racing starting at 5 p.m. each Thursday throughout the remainder of the meet. Add in the strong purses, and you're not going to want to miss the spring meet at Churchill Downs. Get your tickets today at churchilldowns.com.
A five-time Graded Stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrowgate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Catholic Boy, one of only three American three-year-old colts in history to win grade ones on both dirt and turf, including the immortal Secretariat. A six-time Graded Stakes winner from ages 2 to 4, he was the fastest three-year-old of his crop over 10 furlongs. In foal to Catholic Boy, the Dam of Swiss Skydiver sold for $950,000. Dual surface grade one winner Catholic Boy, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Hello, this is Steve Cawthon, winner of the Triple Crown 1978 Aboard Affirmed, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Acclimate holding on to the lead by a length and a half. Cause for commotion. Mongolian Groom is dropping back. Here's Oscar Dominguez coming with a menacing move now. And Oscar Dominguez switches to the outside, trying to run down Acclimate. Red King is also finishing with some interest. Acclimate hanging tough on the front end, has a three-length lead. Oscar Dominguez chasing with determination, though. It's Acclimate, Oscar Dominguez. Acclimate keeps going. Oscar Dominguez trying so hard. Acclimate, Oscar Dominguez. Acclimate, wire to wire in the San Juan. Oscar Dominguez was second. Red King third. You gotta wanna... and cause for commotion.
Santa Anita announcer Frank Miramati bringing them home in the 2019 running of the San Juan Capistrano. Acclimate getting the victory that day. He's hoping for the same result later today at Santa Anita as he's back to defend his crown. We'll see if he can do it coming up later this afternoon. And now I'm joined by the man who, well, we call him the Pontiff, but maybe the only trainer who has used the, at that time, Grade 1 San Juan Capistrano as a prep race for the Hasta La Vista at Turf Paradise. He is Jude Feld, and he's with me now. JT, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. I know you love this race, and I love that story that you told me about using this race as a prep for the Hasta La Vista. Fantastic.
Yeah, my old client, Dick Gase, and he used to tease me about it all the time. And Dick's been a good friend for many years. But I actually did run in the San Juan Capistrano. I was trying to win it. I knew my horse probably wasn't good enough, but he ran a good fifth that day. And they took him over to defend his Hasta La Vista crown. He'd won the race the year before, and he got the job done again. So back-to-back Hasta La Vistas for Kappelmeister, who was a cool horse. He won the Swiss Derby as a three-year-old, obviously, and he was a hard horse to spot because he needed to run like a mile and a half to do any good. But mile and seven-eighths of the Hasta La Vista was right up his alley.
We were talking yesterday about this particular race, the San Juan Capistrano, and how much history the race possesses. It was a Grade One for many, many years. It was 50 years ago that your favorite horse, Cougar II, won the San Juan Capistrano, and it, at that point, it hadn't been graded yet, but the race was about a mile and three quarters, and Cougar II proved how good he was that day. It was one of 14 wins for Hall of Fame trainer Charlie Winningham in the San Juan Capistrano. Incredible.
Yeah, he really owned that race for many years. Obviously one of the greatest trainers of all time and a fantastic guy. So happy that I got to know him and call him a friend. And, you know, the race has always meant a lot to me. After we had our conversation yesterday, I was looking back on the history of the race, and I realized that the first one I remember seeing was in 1962. So I was only 5 years old, but I remember Olden Times winning that race and Bill Shoemaker, of course, one of my favorites. And it was great then. And it's still a great race. It's kind of lost a little bit of luster with lacking of the grade one and that type of thing. But, you know, still it's a tough race to win. It's a mile and three quarters on the turf, and you got to be fit. And with Ascot this week, it kind of, you know, brings back memories of a lot of those distance races that were so cool back in the day.
Other than the fact that Charlie Whittingham may be arguably the greatest trainer of all time, why was he able to have so much success in this particular race?
Well, his horses were always fit, and I think he used to actively try to find horses that he could win the San Juan Capistrano with. He bought a lot of horses from South America and some horses from Europe, and, you know, he was always on the lookout for a horse that could go that far because it was a race that he loved and always wanted to win, and obviously did a fine job. 14 victories, that's amazing. But he did a lot of amazing things in his life, and sometimes people say to me, oh, Charlie Whittingham, you know, he wasn't that great. He never won 100 races in a year. Well, in those days, you could only have 40 horses on the grounds, and he would have some horses at San Luis Rey that, like, his second string getting ready or whatever, but he didn't have that many horses. I mean, guys today have 300 head of horses in training, so you can win 100 races, but, you know, he was in a class by himself, really.
The other statement you made yesterday when we were talking about Whittingham and this particular race was the fact that the San Juan Capistrano is a Hall of Fame trainer's race. And when you flip through the trainers that have won, you see names like Bobby Frankel and Dwayne Lucas and Neil Drysdale and Ron McAnally, Richard Mandela, all Hall of Famers. It's a race that if you know how to train a racehorse and do it well, you can have a lot of success in a race like this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you see guys like Elliot Birch won the race in 1976 with One on the Isle. And then you look at the list of horses that have won. I mean, a lot of them are household names. You know, going back in the real old days, Noor, who was a champion from Ireland, the race was on the dirt in those days. But he won the race in 1950. He was just a ridiculously good horse. and then the jocks that have won it, Bill Hartack and Eddie Arcaro and Shoemaker, we mentioned Sandy Hawley and Johnny Longden. Johnny Longden's last ride on George Royal, that was a big day that day in 1966. It was his last race, last win, and he got up in the shadow of the wire to win the race. I mean, it's just a crazy day. So you see these horses, you go over the list of the horses that have won it, the jockeys, the trainers. It's interesting, Johnny Adams, the great Johnny Adams, he was a jockey and a trainer. He won the race twice as a jockey and twice as a trainer. So that's kind of an interesting feat. He was a tremendous trainer. In my opinion, maybe the best American jockey that ever became a trainer. I mean, he did some amazing things with horses.
Well, the race was a grade one right up until 2004 when it became a grade two and then received grade three status in 2015, and that's what it is today. Acclimate is a horse that won the race in 2019. We heard the rejoin coming out of the commercial break. He's trained by Phil D'Amato. Phil D'Amato also trained the winner, Red King, last year, and now Acclimate looking to become the seventh horse in the history of the San Juan Capistrano to win it twice, and he is going to be one of the horses, if not the horse, to beat later today. Jude, we like to say, is it so-and-so and everybody else? Is it Acclimate and everybody else later today?
Well, you know, Red King's in the race, too, so if those two square off, it's going to be a great, you know, renewal, a nice rivalry. I'm leaning towards Red King. I think he's coming up to the race good, and he's got Rispoli, who I like, and so... That's where I'm gonna head with Red King. Depends on the price. It's a real short field this year, only six horses, so not gonna get that tremendous pace picture that you sometimes get in the race. And I'm gonna string along with Red King.
Yeah, I completely disrespected Red King. He also would win the race for a second time, and he would do it in consecutive years. Obviously, after winning it last year for Phil D'Amato. The San Juan Capistrano is set for race number 11. That's the final race on the program today at Santa Anita, 6:29 Pacific, 9:29 Eastern time. And we'll see. Phil D'Amato certainly seems to be holding a lot of cards. If there was an upsetter in there, Jay, do you have anybody you like, or is it all about the favorites?
Well, I think the favorites are going to be tough, but the horse on the rail, Lure Him In, is an interesting prospect. Bob Hess trains him, and you know, he's got some good figures. When I was a little kid, I read a book called Making Money on the Races, and there was a marathon system in the book, and I've been using it my whole life with pretty good success. And he's a horse that has a decent figure. I mean, he's 20 points behind Red King, but if he was you know, capable of moving that figure up a little bit, he could be tough in there.
Visiting with the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Great to hear his voice back on the airwaves again. You caught him throughout Derby Week, and you'll get a chance to hear him again up the road, I'm sure. JT, let's shift gears for a minute. I didn't tell you we were going to talk about this, but I know you've been watching Royal Ascot all week, and so many racing fans here in the States have been tuned into the coverage, and so many great performances already. Have there been a couple of moments that kind of stood out to you, what made you step back and say, wow, that was a really, really impressive race?
You know, I really haven't been wowed by anybody. I mean, where you just go, man, that horse is a freak, you know, which happens sometimes during Ascot.
Yeah.
But it's been kind of a funny week. You know, there's been a little weather, and you know, there's been some controversy with the rides, the trips, the stewards' decisions, and they have a little bit different way of looking at racing in the UK than we do. Of course, Wesley's filly Campanelle got put up yesterday, and that was kind of a controversial decision around the world. But in the U.S., you know, everybody thought the horse that won the race should have come down, and Wesley's filly got awarded the race, and that's the way the stewards looked at it as well. So, but it's been a good week of racing. I had good days every day, but Thursday was a non-cashable ticket day. that was a rough one for me, but yesterday was good. Rebounded with three winners, and you know, we'll see what happens today. Today's a lot of bad weather, so I don't know exactly where we're sitting with the course, but we'll have to pay attention. It's a great week of racing, though. It's a lot of fun to watch, and everybody that's been—I've never been—but everybody that goes there says it's like one of the best experiences of their life. So someday may get over there. Maybe we should do an HRN show from Royal Ascot.
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
I look good in top hat and tails.
Yeah, absolutely. Who doesn't? And, you know, might get a chance to meet the queen. What the heck? I know Wesley tells some great
We'll get her on the show.
What's that?
Yeah, she is extremely knowledgeable when it comes to horse racing. Let's get her on the show.
Oh, absolutely. She loves her racing, and she inherited that from her mother. The queen mom, as they used to refer to her, she loved her horses, and Queen Elizabeth loves hers as well. And I know it's been a tough week for her because she hasn't been able to get out to the track as much as she'd like with the COVID restrictions and everything. So she's up against it this year, but she's been watching on television, I know, and following along as much as possible. So, I always root for her horses. She's got cool silks and a stable full of runners, so she'll be all right.
All right, well, listen, JT, really appreciate the visit this morning. Thanks for taking the time to share some memories of the San Juan Capistrano. Happy Father's Day tomorrow. Enjoy the day, and we'll catch up again soon.
All right, thanks, Mike. Good to be with you.
All right, the Pontiff of the Pick Four here on HRRN. Yeah, great to hear his voice and good stuff looking back on the history and some of the memories that Jude shared in the San Juan Capistrano. And, again, a race that holds so much history. And today is the 86th running, maybe, of the San Juan Capistrano. That might be right. I read that somewhere. It's somewhere in there. It's in the 80s. It's a historic race, and so many wonderful horses have come through there. John Henry, another one. You heard me play the clip earlier of John Henry winning the Arlington Million in 81. He ran in the San Juan Capistrano, won the San Juan Capistrano in 1980. So, yeah, fantastic stuff, and that race should be pretty solid later today. When I come back, I will be joined by one of the top jockeys in the country. He has been for a very, very long time now, and he is also one of racing's newest fathers. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Hey, horse players, it's Paul Allen, radio voice of the Purple and track announcer at Canterbury Park. In 2020, Canterbury introduced a 10% takeout pick 5, the best value in racing. This year, in addition to the nation's lowest takeout pick 5, Canterbury is introducing an all-new $1 10% takeout pick 6. No jackpots, no gimmicks. Watch and wager on Canterbury Park all summer. Racing runs Tuesday through Thursday at 5 p.m. Central and Sundays at 1. CanterburyPark.com. Come play.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Live racing is back at Woodbine, and in this week's report, I'll tell you who you can keep an eye on as the stakes action begins this weekend. Plus, a closer look at a 9-year-old gelding still at the top of his game. The Grade 3 $150,000 Whimsical Stakes and the $125,000 Starshoot Stakes share the spotlight on Saturday's 12-race card at Woodbine. 8 starters are set to go postward in the Whimsical, a 6-furlong main track event for fillies and mares 4-year-olds and up, while 8 hopefuls chase the top prize in the 6-furlong Starshoot on the main track for 3-year-old fillies. LNJ Foxwoods Stakes winner Boardroom, a finalist for the 2020 Champion Female Sprinter Sovereign Award, is set to vie for top honors in the Whimsical. Trained by Canadian Horse Racing Hall of Fame inductee Josie Carroll, the 4-year-old daughter of Commissioner has assembled an impressive 3-1-1 record from 5 lifetime starts. LNJ Foxwoods is also represented in the Starshoot, sending out Drunk Dial, a bay daughter of Dialed In, who notched an impressive 5.5 length win in her debut last November. On Sunday, the ageless 9-year-old gelding Pink Lloyd, a 7-time Sovereign Award winner, including Horse of the Year honors in 2017, returns in search of a 5th consecutive win in the Grade 3 Jacques Cartier Stakes for owners Entourage Stable and Canadian Hall of Fame trainer Robert Tiller. The Jacques Cartier is race 7 on the Sunday program with a post of 4:29 Eastern. And that is your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTV.
Hi, I'm Leah Jarmati, and I love listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
I think the most important thing he's taught me as far as horsemanship is patience. A lot of our best horses have come after layoffs because we needed time. The horses needed time to develop and do better. Horses like Tepin or Noble Bird. And then as far as just being a human being, just being nice and treating everyone with respect. I think probably the most important thing that we do is we're just gracious to everyone. That doesn't happen back here on the backside a lot. And I think people respect us for it. He's my hero. I think everybody needs to have people that they need to look up to and try to like replicate or I don't know the best word to describe it, but everybody, most successful people have people they look up to, and I'll acknowledge I look up to Dad a lot.
That's Norm Cassie talking about his father, Mark Cassie, on this Father's Day weekend. That was from a show that he and I did together back in 2018, and he was sharing some thoughts on his dad and what his dad meant to him. And happy Father's Day to all the dads throughout HRN Nation, including jockey Jose Ortiz, who became a father for the third time last Friday evening, along with his beautiful wife, Taylor. They welcomed Nikolai, who is now number three on the list for the Ortiz family. And Jose is with me now here on HRRN. Jose, first of all, congratulations, my friend.
Thank you, Mike. How are you?
Doing great. And I loved some of the pictures that the two of you shared on social media. What a night last Friday night, huh?
Yeah, it was amazing. And I mean, we are blessed. We have a healthy kid, and it just being happy.
You know, I heard in that clip from Norm Cassie, he referred to his father as his hero. And I guess that's something that every dad would love to hear. I know your kids are still very, very young, but they'll grow up fast, and you are trying to balance being one of the top jockeys in the country and be a father at the same time. How do you do it?
Well, as you know, Taylor rode, and it made it a lot easier for me. She understands what it takes. She knows it's going to take the morning, afternoons, handicapping at night, and she understands that, so that helped me a lot. But I try to keep it separate. When I get back to the house, I try to play as much as I can with them, and when I'm gone, so they watch me on TV, and they cheer from home.
What do they think of Dad riding horses for a living?
I think they are too young. Too young to understand yet. They only know I'm gonna ride the horses, but they don't understand the whole picture yet.
You know, I talked to Todd Pletcher a few weeks ago on my trainer talk show, and I asked him a similar question about, you know, balancing being a top trainer and trying to be a father and all those types of things. And he, much like you, he talked about his wife Tracy and how instrumental she has been in helping to make that easier. But he also regrets not always being there for some of the, you know, soccer games and things like that he's had to miss out on because he's working. As the kids get older, is that something that's going to be hard for you, do you think, to not be there for some of the things that they're going to be doing?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. As a parent, you don't want to miss those kind of events. But unfortunately, in our job, you know, Saturday is a big day, so we cannot miss Saturday either. But yeah, I'm gonna be sad when that time comes, but it is what it is, and I'm gonna try to make it as much as I can to you know, when I can, I'm gonna make sure I go. So when I cannot go, I don't feel as bad. But yeah, it'd be a little weird.
Talk with Jose Ortiz here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, welcomed Nikolai to the family last Friday. What a great name. Where did the name come from?
My wife. It was one of the... We make a list, and we keep making a short list. Take some names out, and it was the one the last man standing, that name. So, I mean, that's the one we both agree and we both like.
It was
my wife. My wife picked the names.
The other children, Leilani and Derek Jose, where did those names come from? Was that you or was that her too?
I picked the first two. I like Leilani. It's Hawaiian and means a beautiful flower, and she was beautiful, so it fits. And Derek, I always liked the name. And I knew when I had a boy, I was going to name him Derek. So I picked the first two, so it was her time to pick the third time.
If any of the children come to you one day and say, Dad, I want to be a jockey too, what do you tell them?
They can after they finish with school. As long as they finish school, they can go ahead and be jockeys for sure. I'm gonna support them in whatever they want to do, you know. Hopefully they go on and do something else because it's not easy. But I cannot tell them not to do it when I did it, you know. So, I mean, I guess the time will come and I'll let them decide whatever they want to do. And whatever they want to do, I'm going to be there to support them 100%, you know.
So many times when we talk about Jose Ortiz, we're talking about your older brother, Irad, too. And it's so great that the two of you get to, well, number one, work together, but live so close to each other. Does it help having the two families so close? Because Irad has his children, too. Does it help?
Yeah, it helps. The kids, they get along really, really well, and they play a lot when they're together. So it's great. I live around 2 minutes away from my house here. Sometimes it goes 2 or 3 weeks that we don't see each other, but they finally get together. Like now, going to Saratoga and stuff, it's going to be great. They have a ton of fun when the six of them are together. I mean, the four of them, because Ira's little one don't know much, and my little one don't know much either. So when the four big ones get together, they had a ball. So it's been great for the family. My mom is here with us, helping us. I mean, can't get any better. We are super happy.
I remember sitting down with you and your brother for one of our Jock Talk programs we did years ago. We sat down at Saratoga, and the two of you were together with us. And was it your grandfather that was a big influence on you and your brother getting into racing, or was it your father?
My grandfather rode, and my uncle did too. But my father, he wanted to ride, but he couldn't because he was too heavy. But yeah, my father was a huge influence for us. He wanted us to be a jockey, you know.
Well, for whatever reason, it turned out wonderfully for you and for your brother. And, yeah, I'm sure your dad very, very proud. And, you know, I'm sure you're going to have a wonderful time spending time with the family on Father's Day weekend. I know you're working, but you'll get some time. And, Jose, you're one of the classiest guys in the business and such a wonderful family man, too. So all the best to you and to Taylor, and happy Father's Day, my friend. Appreciate you taking a little time.
Thank you, Mike. Happy Father's Day to everybody.
All right. Jose Ortiz here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I reached out to Jose yesterday, you know, because I really did think that, you know, that news of Nikolai and he and Taylor welcoming their third child 8 days ago was really, really cool. And I said, who better to come on? And I'm sure there's plenty of people I could have asked, but there are plenty of people in the game that are like Jose that have to work on the weekends, have to work during the week, like Todd Pletcher. You know, I bring him up as an example because we talked about this not too long ago, but yet they still make time and they still try to find that balance and make time to spend with family. And for Jose right now, he's very fortunate. You heard him say his mom is here, and his brother, Irad, is very close. So they're not far in proximity to each other so that they can, you know, have the kids together. It's just wonderful. And congrats to Jose and to Taylor again on their third child. And, yeah, happy Father's Day to all the dads throughout HRN Nation. I'll be back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Fans, don't miss the final 2 days of Santa Anita's Winter Spring Meet this Saturday and Sunday. With just 2 days to go, we'll have 4 stakes each day. On Saturday, the 81st running of the Grade 3 $100,000 San Juan Campestrano, which will be contested at a mile and 3/4 on turf, will be accompanied by the $150,000 Snow Chief, the $150,000 Malaire, and the $75,000 Siren Lure. Don't miss a minute of the action. Make your reservations now at santaanita.com/open. On closing day Sunday, we'll have mandatory payouts in all exotic wagers, including the 20-cent Rainbow Pick 6 jackpot, and we'll have 4 outstanding stakes, the Grade 3 Wilshire, the Grade 3 American, and a pair of $100,000 stakes for 2-year-olds at 5 furlongs, the Fassick Tipton Debutante and the Fassick Tipton Futurity. First race post time on Saturday and Sunday will be at 1 o'clock. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
Hello, I'm Junior Alvarado, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, yesterday I swung by the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky, and took a look around down in the bow shop, talked with John and his son Nathan. They do a fantastic job at Whitetail Heaven in the bow shop. John is the bow tech. And they really have a really cool selection there. And as many of you know, I have spent my entire life enjoying the outdoors, hunting, fishing, all those types of things. And if you haven't been to the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore, you are really missing out. As I mentioned, it is in Nicholasville, Kentucky, just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road, owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley. So when you stop in there, if Tevis is around, you can talk horses, you can talk hunting, you can talk fishing, whatever it might be. And if you're looking to hunt deer, turkey, ducks, so much more, they have everything that you would need. They even have 2 indoor archery ranges. They have boots. They have guns there now. Stop in and see them today. It's the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. You will not be disappointed. Well, the poll question today, or more of a question of the day than a poll question, I'm asking you in honor of Father's Day to share your favorite memory of being at the track with your father. And I wish I had seen this when Jude was on. I would have asked him about it. But Jude was kind enough to share a picture of him and his dad and his Gallup girl, Brenda, celebrating a winter at Santa Anita Park and having a blast. And he said it was a great day. I'm sure it was. Greg chimes into the poll question here and says, 10 years old. First and only time in the Belmont paddock for the 2001 Breeders' Cup Sprint. Dad hands me a $20 win ticket on Bet on Sunshine. I'd never had more than $2 on a horse. We didn't win that day, but we'll never forget that first trip to New York, just me and Dad. Cool story. And Bill says, we were at Aqueduct on a cold winter day, lost the first five races. Then Angel Cordero brought us in an 11-1 shot. My dad asked, are you still cold, Will? Nah. Wonderful story there. And received an email from Mikey who says, I was with my dad, and he went to play a $100 win bet and got shut out. I remember the race to this minute. I was seven then. Leaving me in suspense here, Mikey. Did the horse win? I hope not. That would be brutal. Wonderful. Keep those coming. In honor of Father's Day, share your favorite memory of being at the track with your father. You can do it at HRRN on Twitter. You can do it at Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. Time to take a look at what's happened on this day in racing history, June 19th. It was June 19th, 1867, that the inaugural Belmont Stakes was run at Jerome Park in the Bronx and was won, of course, by a filly, Ruthless, who defeated Colts to earn, how about this, $1,850 for her victory. June 19th, 1880, Sheepshead Bay Racecourse opened for a six-day meet. The track was the original site of the Suburban, Futurity, and Realization Stakes when eventually were transferred to which eventually were transferred to Belmont Park. June 19th, 1942 was when Count Fleet won his first race at Aqueduct. And June 19th, 1973 was when officials at Arlington Park invited Secretariat to compete in a specially created race, the $125,000 Arlington Invitational Stakes. And one more for you. June 19th, 1992, Charlie Whittingham became the second trainer in history behind Dwayne Lucas to top $100 million in purse earnings when he sent Little by Little to a second-place finish in the sixth race at Hollywood Park. Actually, I lied. Here's one more. 1998, June 19th of that year, the NTRA All-Star Jockey Championship from Lone Star Park in Grand Prairie. Remember that? It was televised nationally for the first time on ESPN2. The winner of that jockey challenge, I remember it. I was cheering for him because he was so instrumental in my wife and I moving to the state of Kentucky. It was Shane Sellers. He won the 12 jockey competition. Never forget that night. That was really cool. I remember watching that. June 19th, 1998. And that's what's happened on this day in racing history. Well, if you missed any portion of the first couple of hours of the show, my interviews with Robert Tiller talking about Pink Lloyd going for a fifth consecutive win in the Jacques Cartier Stakes at Woodbine tomorrow. My interview with Gerard Melanson looking back on his career after winning number 5,000, becoming just the 37th jockey to join that club. Bob Kiekeffer was fantastic in talking about the situation at Arlington Park. He was with me at 9 o'clock Eastern time. The pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, took a look at today's San Juan Capistrano Stakes and look back on the history of that event. That was at 9:20, and then just a short time ago, you heard from one of the top jockeys in the country and one of racing's newest fathers, Jose Ortiz. If you missed any portion of any of those interviews or any of the program, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure, and so many of you taking time to do that. Not just this show, by the way. So many of you have taken time to listen to the podcasts of our Trainer Talk show, which airs on Wednesday nights. That's all presented by Fasig Tipton. The Bristnet.com call-in show on Thursdays, and on Fridays, the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts. Appreciate everybody tuning into those, and they're all available for you right now on our website, horseracingradio.net. Well, that's about going to do it for the first 2 hours of today's show, but there is, trust me, still plenty more to come in hour number three. It begins with this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy. It's a In the Room classic, if you will, with jockey Junior Alvarado. That was a great visit just a couple of months ago. You won't want to miss it. Plus, Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history. And in the final segment of today's show at 10:35 Eastern, I continue down the road to the Breeders' Cup with a look back on this past week at Royal Ascot. You're going to hear from trainers Aidan O'Brien and John Gosden, who both won races, along with jockeys Frankie Dettori and Paul Hannigan. If your local station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the third hour of the show nationwide on Sirius 219, XM 201, in the Louisville, Kentucky market on ESPN 680, or on your computer, phone, or tablet with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. Hour three of the Equine Forum is coming up next. That's all ahead right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Son of my father's lead, length and a half. The second eye, Dance Alone, is running home well on the outside. Son of my father's been in this position before. Can this one hold today? Son of my father in front.
Boss Daddy at the rail has the lead on the curve. Now to challenge Boss Daddy on the curve. Boss Daddy holds.
Big Daddy, cool. Surges home to win it by 3/4 of a length.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Dad, are we there yet? Leads by 4. King's Missile, Pap's Pell vying for that second spot, but they're 5 lengths off the leader, and the leader is the winner. Dad, are we there yet?
And it's Cool Daddy trying to see this through. They turn into the stretch. Cool Daddy still on top.
Just for Papa. Sweeps up on the outside, and Just for Papa takes the lead 3/16 out. It's Just for Papa now accelerating, drawing away by 4.
Dad in front, trying to put them away, and seems to have their measure, and is etching out a win, and Dad will finally break through. Dad by a length.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Happy Father's Day weekend to all the dads across HRRN Nation, and welcome back to Hour 3 of the program here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you one more hour to go. And it's going to be a busy one. Sean Clancy sits down with jockey Junior Alvarado in this week's edition of In the Room. That's just moments away. We'll stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker, and we will go down the road to the Breeders' Cup. Of course, the Horse Racing Radio Network, your exclusive radio home for the Breeders' Cup again in 2021. The only place you'll hear the Breeders' Cup World Championships, both days, by the way, on radio, is with us here on HRRN. Question of the day on social media at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook is this. In honor of Father's Day tomorrow, share your favorite memory of being at the track with your father. Some of you have chosen to chime in on social media while others have sent emails, and a couple more emails coming in. I'll try to read those here in just a minute for you. But some great stories from HRN Nation about being at the racetrack with your father. So many great memories there. I don't actually remember being with my father betting races at the track. I'm sure that there were times that we went, but the first time I remember betting races at Saratoga was with my friends. But I do remember when I first started Horse Racing Radio Network, that in the very first time, and it was a big deal for us, the first time we were able to go broadcast a race at Saratoga, which, you know, of course, my home track, it meant a lot. And myself and the late Pete Kulis, my mentor, my dear friend, who started the network with me, we went and we sat up at Saratoga by the paddock. Our setup was right in front of the old shoe board there outside of the racing office facing the paddock. And I can remember that my dad and my whole family would come over. They would get lawn chairs and they would sit right in front of our location so that they could be close as we were doing the show, and it was great. They'd bring food, of course, which was very, very nice. And it was wonderful. So that's one thing that I'll remember about being at the races. And then, of course, you know, as we were there, there were times when my dad would sit in the grandstand with friends and family, and yeah, pretty cool stuff. So if you have a favorite memory being at the track with your father, share them with me today on this Father's Day edition of the Equine Forum. And here's one for you. JW says that my dad really was not a big horse race fan, but when I invited him and mom to the Pegasus for dinner at the Meadowlands, he agreed to come to dinner. I made the reservation through the racing office since I owned a small piece of a pacer. That evening was the final of a small stakes race, and the maitre d' came to the table and asked if he and his parents would like to present a trophy in the winner's circle. So before the race, they went to the winner's circle. The pictures were on the Jumbotron and presented the trophy. And at that point, his dad was very proud to become a horse racing fan. That's fantastic, JW. Appreciate that one. And one more from Joe, who says, Dad would take us to Great Barrington. How about that? Just a stone's throw from where I grew up. Dad would take us to Great Barrington. I put $2 on a 25-1 shot called Boog's Bunny, my favorite cartoon character. It won, and I asked my dad why people would play 2-1 shots when you can get 25-1. Yeah, great point, Joe. Why play a 2-1 shot when you can win on a 25-1 shot? Great stuff from Joe. Keep them coming, and I'll try to read more later in the program. Again, busy third hour, so let's get it started. We go in the room with Sean Clancy.
Sharp in victory and wrapped up by Junior Alvarado, as they stroll home in the Gotham.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey Junior Alvarado. The 34-year-old Venezuelan native has won 1,788 races for $99 million in a 15-year career that began at Calder, went through Arlington Park, and is now firmly established on the New York circuit and the Florida winter circuit. For the first time in about 10 years, Junior, you're spending the winter in Florida. How's that feel? Got to be a heck of a lot warmer than Aqueduct, I guess.
Hi, Sean. Yeah, thanks so much first for, you know, inviting me to the program in the room. And yeah, you know, really happy here with the weather, you know, having like a wonderful weather so far, you know, and, you know, it's been very, very good here.
Yeah, you're having a strong meet at Gulfstream, and take me through the move to leave Aqueduct for the winter and go to Florida for the winter.
You know, the thing is, just, you know, I have been kind of like building it up little by little, you know. I think the last couple of years, you know, with, you know, I talked to my agent about coming, or, you know, about coming here or staying in Aqueduct. So, you know, it was just a little hesitation. And, you know, when you're going to go somewhere like this, like here in Florida, you know, you don't have to have hesitation. You have to be ready 100% to do it, you know, 100% committed. And, you know, I just think this year, you know, kind of worked out having, you know, like I have two kids that are going to school, you know, so it was easy for me, you know, just to move here without getting them out of school. You know, they still can do it online, the school, and you know, it was just like I said, I mean, everything just worked out perfect this year. Like, you know, everything kind of lined up for me to make the move.
Yeah, and we talked about it years ago at Saratoga when you moved to New York. I mean, making those decisions to leave Arlington Park to go to New York, and now to spend the winter in Florida, that's something that you put a lot of thought and process kind of into deciding if you're ready for it. And you obviously feel ready for it now.
Yes, you know, like I say, you know, sometimes, you know, it's a little quicker, you know, sometimes, you know, you have to kind of wait the right time. And you know, like I said, I mean, just this time, you know, like any other time before when I moved from Arlington to New York, you know, I just, you know, it was just the right time. And you know, it just like, you know, it shows that for me, you know, it was the right time because, you know, the way horses are running for me, the way the business are right here, you know, it's, you know, I've been very blessed, you know, to have a great opportunity since I moved here to Florida. So, you know, it's been working awesome so far.
Yeah, no doubt. You belong. Look, I mean, that's quite obvious. You've made your impact on the big stages. Take me through last weekend. Candyman Rocket winning the Sam Davis, and Get Smokin' winning the Tampa Bay Stakes at Tampa Bay Downs. That must have felt good, those two horses. And talking about the future of those two.
Yes, you know, we'll start with Get Smoking. You know, that's a horse that I've been, you know, watching for quite a while. You know, it's a horse that always run good. You know, it hasn't had that luck yet, you know, like to get the win in a big race. And I just thought, you know, this was a good race for him. You know, like it was a little, you know, even though it was, you know, a stake race, it was a little class relief for him, you know, with the company he was facing this time. And I mean, he proved it that way. You know, he's a nice call, you know, like he likes to be in the lead. You know, this time, you know, we set up a little off the speed this time. And, you know, he run great. You know, I think, you know, moving forward, you know, he's a horse that is going to be tough this year around, you know, if he stays sound. And Candy Rockman, you know, he's a horse, you know, still a baby, you know, only was his third race, first time going that long in the distance, you know. We know how Tampa could be, you know, a little tricky. It's a track, you know, it gets a little tricky sometimes. And, you know, for a horse like him, you know, who's just, you know, it was only his third start and going long, you know, I thought he handled it pretty well, you know. So, you know, bright future there, you know, like I said, hopefully, you know, it's all about just stay sound from now on. You know, I think the talent is there, and you know, I'm pretty happy with what we have so far.
And it's February, three-year-olds, you're obviously looking ahead. I mean, do you have to kind of force yourself to not look too far ahead with a horse like that, thinking Kentucky Derby in May? I mean, is that something that's on your mind, or you just put that out of your mind?
No, I mean, you can avoid that, you know. You know, when you go, like, as of right now, you're going to run those big races, you know, you ended up winning, you know, you're getting points for the Derby, you know. It just automatically goes into your head, and, you know, it gets you excited, you know. It's definitely, you know, like, the excitement around this time when you ride those three-year-old races, stakes, you know, you could end up with, you know, one of those horses for the Derby.
No question. Take us back to the beginning. Your dad was a jockey in Venezuela. Was it something that you always wanted to do growing up? Did you emulate him and worship him as a jockey? Or what was that like? I mean, what was your childhood? Was it always, I'm going to be a jockey?
Yes, you know, since I have me memory about myself being, you know, that little, you know, I always wanted to be a jockey. You know, I think probably when I was 4 years old, I still remember going to the track and you know, in the morning a couple times with my brother. And then, you know, like, I don't remember me wanting to be something else other than jockey, you know. And I always, you know, like I said, I always look up to him, to my dad, and you know, and just, you know, it's been a dream so far.
And what's racing in Venezuela? You won your first race in 2005 at, I don't know if I can say this, La Rinconada, on a horse named Estevana. I mean, what was that like? What was the racing like that there?
Yeah, you know, that actually was my first win crossing the wire first. But actually my first win, you know, it was a horse that I finished second, and I got, you know, I got put up. You know, that's what I say sometimes. I don't say because it doesn't count for me. I mean, it counts, but, you know, for me, it was just, I wanted to cross the wire first for me to be the first win, you know, like.
Of course.
But, yeah, you know, it's a little funny because my dad was the other way around. The first race that my dad won, he got the cue.
Wow.
Me, I was the other way around, you know. I finished second and I got put up first. So, you know, I always took it this way that, you know, it was probably like that I was going to be more lucky. and the business, you know. And, you know, like,
good question.
It's just been great, been amazing.
And the move to America, was that an easy move? Or was your dad behind that 100%? What was that like? Take me through that decision.
Yes, you know, it's, you know, I remember, you know, 2006, 2007, you know, those are, you know, like, I was doing great in Venezuela. I was, you know, fighting for being the apprentice of the year there. And my brother was here, and, you know, he kind of, like, started talking to me about it and, you know, start watching races here in the United States. And, I mean, it was something, you know, you have that feeling where you say, like, I want to do that there. I wanted to do it there, you know, like. And like I said, even though I have a lot of success in Venezuela, you know, like, it just got that bug in me where, like, I see myself, you know, making it here. And you know, and I start working out to see how I would get my papers and all the stuff. And you know, and yes, my dad was like 120% aboard, you know. Like, that's probably what that little extra push, if I needed one, it was about, like, you know, my dad, you know, supporting me about it. And, I mean, he's, you know, he started, you know, since we started talking about if I could move here, you know, he just started telling me that, you know, he admired, you know, Angel Cordero, De La Hussie, all those, you know, big jockeys. And you know, he just, like, gave me the extra that I needed at that point for me to really, like, you know, move forward with the plan.
He's got to be proud of you. I remember talking to you in 2012 back at Saratoga about trying to get your dad here to come enjoy your career. Did that ever happen?
It did happen, yeah. That year, at the end of the year, you know, I get them the visa, you know. And since then, you know, every summer they come here, they stay with me for approximately 6 months every year. And you know, and it's, you know, since then, you know, they've been going back and forth. And, you know, like I said, I mean, I love when I win the races, but, you know, sometimes even my wife get to record the recording how he cheers for me. Like, he just goes to another level when I see that. Like, he brings tears to my eyes. Doesn't matter how many times I get to win and she gets to record my dad, like, and I get to see how excited he gets for any kind of race. That it doesn't matter. It could be a claiming 6,000 or a great one. He cheers all the same way. So he just, you know, awesome.
That's brilliant. Have you ever thought back to your life if you stayed in Venezuela?
Yes, actually, you know, I talked that with my dad. Like, what would it be if I would have stayed there? Like, what would have been my life? You know, I have three beautiful children right now. Like, I don't know. I would have to say, you know, my life so far has been just perfect. You know, I would have changed it. I would have traded it for anything in the world. You know, I have to do it all over again. I'll do it all the same way I just did it and wouldn't change not even a thing.
Yeah. Take us through some of the horses you've ridden, the Flat Out, Moreno, Mohamed. I mean, which ones stand out? I mean, I know you've ridden some really big horses here and won grade ones. Is there one stands out more than the other or one that kind of got you to the next one?
Well, you know, like every horse, you know, like, you know, give you, you know, you make a space for them in your heart. You know, everyone have a, you know, special part in you and for me in my career. You know, like, I think one of the big ones that really kind of like helped me to get to a next level here in New York was probably Flat Out. You know, like, he gave me a beautiful, nice ride. You know, winning the Cigar Mile was one of those, for me, like, one of those biggest races here in New York, you know. And you know, he has a good place in my heart, you know. And it's always, you know, like, for me, when they ask me about horses, you know, for some reason, Flat Out is one of the first ones that come to my mind. You know, Mohamed, you know, finished four in the Kentucky Derby, is like my best placing so far in the Derby. So, like, you know, I have that for him too, you know. You know, yeah, I mean, I got this filly, Eclair de Lune, where I won my first grade one in Arlington Park, you know, the Beverly D. So she has a huge place, too, you know, like, just winning my first grade one here in America. And it was for, you know, for the owner of the Arlington Park, you know, which is Mr. Dutchessois. Yeah, it was just an unbelievable feeling. You know, he was there. You know, he bought that filly just to try to win that race. You know, you couldn't make that up. You know, even if you tried again. But yeah, it's just a lot of good horses. You know, they and other horses. You know, they haven't been you know, great estate horses that, you know, like, have a good place in my heart.
For sure, like Lou Bosch and Mr. Buff.
Exactly, Sagina, you know, those are big, you know, grade one, grade two horses, but, you know, they really, you know, like, I enjoy it to be able to ride those kind of horses, too.
Well, one that stands out for me was Amazon Corps and the Prioress at Saratoga for Alan Jerkins. I watched it with the Chief, and what was that like for you to provide that kind of moment for a man that was so special to all of us?
You know, it was unbelievable, you know, to be honest. You know, it was a great feeling, but, you know, I think after winning that race, I have a very, you know, I start understanding how important and how well-known and how much people love the Chief. You know, that was 2013. I only probably had in New York maybe a full year riding here. So, you know, I was still, you know, like learning things and knowing trainers and knowing things around. You know, I didn't know how important he was in the business at that point. I think until that race, you know, when I won that race, I saw how people were cheering and, you know, clapping when he was walking to the winner's circle. You know, I was like in a cloud now. You know, I was just amazed how much people really, really love the Chief. You know, and after that, you know, every time I had to ride for him, you know, I have an extra appreciation, you know, for somebody like him, you know, who's very, you know, he was very strong in our sport.
Yeah, sometimes our game, it transcends the horses and the moments on the racetrack to kind of realize the enormity of relationships and how special people are in your lives, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, that's one of those moments for sure.
And then take me through winning with Preservationist for Jimmy Jurgens. That had to be special, too. I come back, that was like 7 years later.
Yes. You know, like, always been, you know, very, I will say, you know, we'll put it this way, we've been very lucky with Jimmy, you know, but he's been very supporting me, you know, like, he always ride me out through the whole year, you know, we have a good relation, you know, and, you know, having to win with this horse, you know, he has put a lot of work. I know he was always high on that horse. And, you know, even though, you know, he was a horse that, like, you know, for his 3-4 year old campaign, he was just running in Ecuador, you know, always knew he was very high on him. And, you know, like, just to get to the point where we ended up winning a great one, you know, and great two with him, you know, it was just an unbelievable for me just to see the great horseman Jimmy Jurgens is, you know, like, just to get a horse like that until, you know, he keep, you know, trying, and he knew what to do exactly just to get to that point. Didn't matter how long it took him, just to get there, period. You know, it was just an unbelievable process, you know. And like I said, just to be a part, you know, I've been just so blessed just to be a part, you know, with things around us, so many great horsemen and, you know, great people too, you know.
Yeah, for a jockey, it's the loyalty from the trainers that makes such a difference. And you've had the loyalty of Bill Mott and Jimmy Jurgens and horsemen like that. That's got to be a special feeling. Gives you the confidence you need to go out and do your job, I guess.
Yes, you know, it just, you know, like anything. I mean, I guess, you know, I will put it this way. I think every time, you know, I write for those trainers who have that confidence in you, who, like, let you decide. And when you make a mistake, they're fine with it because they know a mistake will happen, you know. You gain 2-3 lengths every time you ride a horse for them, you know, period. You're giving a 2-3 length advantage to those horses because, you know, you try an extra because it doesn't matter the outcome, you know, they'll be okay with it, you know, whatever is the mistake. So you, like, it's that relationship, you know, they let you do your job, and then, you know, of course, you know, you definitely will, you try your best, and like I said, it just works. You know, when they let you do their job like that and they have that confidence in you, you know, you kind of, like, go to another level of how you ride their horses. You know what I mean? You just, like, it gets to an extraordinary level when they let you do the job the way you want it, you know.
That's exactly right. That's Junior Alvarado. Nobody's doing it better than Junior at the moment on the level, on the success for good horsemen on the best circuit. Junior, thanks for your time today, and good luck in the future. We're rooting for you.
Yeah, well, thank you so much again for inviting me, and, you know, I'm here anytime, guys.
All right, In the Room brought to you by ThisIsHorseRacing.com and all of the 20% of the sponsorship, by the way, being donated to the PDJF to help support Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. So if you would like to be involved with the sponsorship of In the Room, contact me, Mike@HorseRacingRadio.net, and we'll put everything together for you, and we will support the PDJF together. When I come back, it is time to stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker, and still ahead, I'll go down the road to the Breeders' Cup. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Championship racing is now at the legendary Pimlico Racecourse. The Pimlico meet offers live racing Friday through Sunday with a post time of 12:40 p.m. Wager on Pimlico's Rainbow Pick 6. The carryover has crushed the Maryland state record and has passed the $1 million mark. Don't miss your chance to win big. Rainbow 6 is offered Friday through Sunday at Pimlico. Limited track admissions, or catch the action via live stream at pimlico.com.
Adina Springs bred and raced the best son of Hall of Famer Ghost Sapper. champion, multiple Grade 1 winner, and fellow Hall of Famer Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in 3 decades to reel off this historic Grade 1 double.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
The Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
This week's Flair Fact is brought to you by Achieve Equine, maker of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. A horse can use twice the oxygen per kilogram of body weight of any human athlete. This is called maximal oxygen consumption. This means that for each kilogram that a horse weighs, that mass can consume 2 times the oxygen during maximal exercise before it fatigues, making horses able to push harder and longer. For more Flair facts, visit flairstrips.com/learn.
I'm Manny Franco, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back. Mike Penna continuing on with you on this Saturday morning. And one of the more popular segments we've added since expanding the show to 3 hours has been our stroll through racing history with my good friend Kurt Becker. Each week he takes you on a journey. And this week it's a little bit of a different type of stroll through racing history, but I think you're really going to like it. It's a special edition of Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. On a hot and humid afternoon recently in the rural community of La Center, near the Ohio River in western Kentucky, we caught up with former jockey Patricia Cooksey. Retired from the saddle since June of 2004, Patty, or PJ as she is sometimes known, now works for the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission as a presiding judge for harness racing on the Kentucky Fair Circuit. On this particular occasion, she was keeping watch over a 16-race program perched under an umbrella along the top row of a set of aluminum bleachers overlooking a half-mile racetrack. She has traded her boots and riding crop for a pair of flip-flops and a set of binoculars as she goes about the business of conducting inquiries, investigating claims of foul, and enforcing license requirements for the Kentucky standardbred community. She notes with pride that her father trained harness horses when she was growing up in Youngstown, Ohio. Still, Patty Cooksey smiles when harness racing fans ask her about her illustrious riding career. More than 2,000 wins, 4 riding titles at Turfway Park, winningest female jockey ever at Churchill Downs, first woman to ride in the Preakness, second woman to ride in the Kentucky Derby, on and on the list goes. And Patty graciously accommodated our request when we asked her to be our tour guide for this edition of our Stroll Through Racing History. We began by asking Patty about So Vague, a colt whom she rode in the Kentucky Derby back in 1984. While she is grateful to be able to say she rode in the Derby, she also remembers the thrill of going to California to ride So Vague as a juvenile in the 1983 Hollywood Preview. It was a race which saw her become the first female jockey ever to win a $100,000 stakes in California, as So Vague paid $35 as part of the mutual field.
And it was kind of funny. Everybody's going, what are you flying clear out there for to ride that horse? He's got no shot, you know. And my motto always was, you can't win it if you're not in it. Hey, it was an opportunity. They paid my way out. It's a stake. You know, there's Willie Shoemaker, Chris McCarron, Georgie Velasquez. I mean, you name it. The top riders in the nation. 14 horse field going 7 furlongs. And I can remember the race again like it was yesterday, you know. And my horse started picking it up, and I kind of looked up the stretch, and they started spreading out. Now, these are a bunch of two-year-olds, but they're like all running at the same time. And I remember I had to just make a right-hand turn because I was rolling. And it was great getting back to the jock's room because they were all like, oh, the big jock from Kentucky comes and takes all the money type thing. day, and it was just so fun. Those guys were so supportive and everything, and so that was pretty memorable.
Another race Cooksey vividly remembers was one which took place 16 years later in the fall of 1999 at Keeneland Racecourse in Lexington, Kentucky. That was the day she rode Gimme a Kissy in the Valley View Stakes and pulled a 34-1 upset. She remembers it well.
Like it was yesterday. You know, that was my only stakes win at Keeneland. You know, it was awful tough riding there behind Pat Day and those guys. But I'd ridden the filly before, and she ran a good race, but she kind of died on me, and she kind of run off a little bit the first part of the race. So they decided to put her in the stakes race, and I asked them if I could, you know, change my strategy a little bit. And they said, you just ride her. So I took her back. She had a lot of speed. I took her back behind two other horses, and I was strangling her, trying to hold her off the pace, just not wanting her to run that first part. And top of the stretch, I just kind of let her start going out a little bit, and she started picking them up, passed them. But I'll tell you what, I was glad nobody was coming at the 16th pole and at the wire, because she was walking. But hey, we got the win. I'll take it.
Cooksey also recalls another race from her days of riding at Keeneland, but it wasn't a stakes and she didn't win. Instead, it was a maiden special weight held at Keeneland's fall meet in the year 2000. The colt she rode that day finished off the board, but she never forgot him. The colt's name was Monarcos.
I was getting on him for John Ward, galloping in the mornings, breezing him, and he was just a big lazy colt, lazy as can be. And we just couldn't get him to, we couldn't get it to click in his mind that you're a racehorse, you have to run faster. So Mr. Ward told me, he said, I'm just going to put him in a race. He said, we're just going to break him sharp, put him in between horses, let him get some dirt. You know, we're going to teach him something, because it just hadn't clicked for him. So I got to ride Monarcos his first start, and of course he went on to win the Kentucky Derby.
A battle with cancer would sideline Cooksey from September of 2001 until June of 2002. She returned to the races, but 10 months later, in April of 2003, she broke both legs in a racing accident at Keeneland. Again, she came back, returning in March of 2004, but 3 months later, she decided it was time to walk away. The date was June 24, 2004, and despite the fact 17 years have passed, Cooksey admits that she misses being in the saddle.
I miss riding every day, and I feel like I may have retired prematurely. You know, I'd gone down in that spill at Keeneland and broke both my legs, and a year later, I made a comeback. And, you know, it was going to be tough, but I was determined that wasn't going to be my last race lying in the middle of the racetrack with both legs broken. So I was riding a few, but I was having a lot of pain with the rod in my leg. It was really giving me a lot of pain, and I didn't realize at the time that I could get the rod taken out. I just didn't feel like I was given, you know, I could give the horseman everything because of, you know, the pain. So I went ahead and retired.
Today, Cooksey finds herself enjoying the chance to be involved with horses through a different role. She is now in her second season as chief steward for the standardbred races on the Kentucky Fair Circuit, and she credits the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission's executive director, Mark Guilfoyle, for playing a key role in giving her the opportunity. Our thanks to Patty Cooksey for being our special guest on this week's edition of The Stroll. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Well, and I have gotten to know Patty P.J. Cooksey over the years, and you won't find a greater ambassador for the sport of thoroughbred racing. She is one of the nicest, classiest people in the sport, and I know I say that about several people, but when you meet P.J. Cooksey, her enthusiasm for the sport is infectious, and can't thank her enough for spending time with Kurt. So great that they got a chance to catch up at the fair up in Illinois. Wonderful stuff, and you can join Kurt Becker for that stroll through racing history every single Saturday here on the Equine Forum. When I come back, I'll go down the road to the Breeders' Cup. You're going to hear from Royal Ascot winning trainers John Gosden and Aiden O'Brien, plus winning jockeys Frankie Dettori and Paul Hannigan. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Spring Meet is back at Churchill Downs with live racing now through June 26th. And new this year, Stephen Foster Day has moved to a daytime card with seven total stakes races that include the Breeders' Cup Winning Your In Florida Lee for the Distaff Division and the Stephen Foster for the Classic Division. Churchill also has Twilight Racing starting at 5 p.m. each Thursday throughout the remainder of the meet. Add in the strong purses and you're not going to want to miss the Spring Meet at Churchill Downs. Get your tickets today at churchilldowns.com.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Hip 28 up next, please. What a stride here. Wavertree Stables' agent, a bay colt by Nyquist. He loved Gulfstream. Took down the Florida Derby, Kentucky Derby double, and what a splash his two-year-olds are making, and what a colt we have in front of us. Colt by Nyquist in the ring.
All right, you bet. Hang up. Bet 2627. All done. Last call. $2,700,000, and I have $2,600,000 left field. Thank you both.
Thank you all. And he stood here like a champion.
$2.6 million as the gavel falls on that two-year-old by Darley Stallion Nyquist at this year's Fasig Tipton Gulfstream sale. The filly was purchased for $160,000 as a yearling at Fasig in September and then sold for $2.6 million. Nyquist also had one sell for $400,000 at Keeneland September, which was pinhooked for $900,000 as a two-year-old. Third crop yearlings by Nyquist are selling soon, so let's quist again. Nyquist, your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
This is Florent Giroux, and you are listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And the leaders are bearing down on Shining Copper. Golden Horn, four lengths away, three lengths away. The Pizza Man coming. Red Rifle on the outside. Big Blue Kitten is there, swinging wide off the far turn. Outside of Red Rifle, Golden Horn and Found go 1-2 off the turn. Big Blue Kitten trying to rally down the far outside to catch Golden Horn. Found! What a valiant effort from this filly. She's got a head in front. Golden Horn is second. Down to the line, Big Blue Kitten third. Found had been chasing Golden Horn. Found the best today.
Kurt Becker with the call of the 2015 Breeders' Cup Turf. Found the filly upsetting the boys, or defeating the boys, I should say. She was ultra-talented, highly regarded for trainer Aidan O'Brien, jockey Ryan Moore. And Aidan O'Brien, a fifth win in the Breeders' Cup Turf with Found. And he came back the following year to win it with Highland Reel, the Irish bred, for a sixth win. Nobody has been better in the Breeders' Cup Turf than Ireland's super trainer Aidan O'Brien, and he has another horse by the name of Love, a filly, who is fantastic and won the Prince of Wales on Wednesday at Royal Ascot and punched her ticket now to the Longines Breeders' Cup Turf in November. That win in your in race, again, taking place on Wednesday. There were three win in your ins already this week at Royal Ascot, and we're going to take a look at all three of them. You're going to hear from the winning connections as I go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
It's time to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
Well, we begin by taking a look at the very first of those three Breeders' Cup win-in-your-in races. It was on Tuesday, opening day. It was the Queen Anne Stakes, and here is the way it sounded.
Still bless him in yellow and the orange cap of Accidental Agent towards the back of the field. Pogo in the green jacket, Kieran Schumach and the IG, Prince IG Andrea Tseni in the yellow, with now the silver jacket of Palace Pier nearest to us coming through to launch his challenge. He's being chased along though. Top Rank is there, Sir Buska putting in a big run nearest to us as well. They come to the furlong pole and now Palace Pier and Frankie Dettori have the advantage. Sir Buska and Lope Fernandez giving chase in second and third places. It's a two-length lead for Palace Pier. Races towards the line, and Palace Pier is the winner of the Queen Anne. Lope Fernandez in second.
Palace Pier was trained by John Gosden, ridden by Frankie Dettori, and punches a spot in the starting gate of the Breeders' Cup Mile in November. And here's what John Gosden had to say about the winning act.
a ruthlessly efficient performance from your horse, befitting of his status.
Yeah, look, I think we were very aware there was no pace in the race. Pargo is the only horse who's gone forward. So Frankie said, I'm drawn where I am. I'll just stay on the wing, because we suspected a slow pace, which is what we got, a slow pace, a slow time. But then don't sit out at the back when they kick with 2.5, 3 to run, which they did. And look, he's done it very smoothly. He's come through, won his race, but he's exactly like his father. As soon as he gets there, he's done enough. And if I worked him at home with a very ordinary horse, he would just stay with him. That's his game.
And as performances from you, were you nervous beforehand, or you just had complete confidence?
No, I think
in
when you're odds on like that, it'd be a bit odd if you weren't nervous, because the only thing around the corner is the banana skin. So it can happen. But I think Frankie was aware there would be no pace. So he just asserted early. And I noticed he was hands and heels and a flick just to keep him going. But the horse was definitely playing. Normal blow afterwards. He's probably done more in his work at home than he had to do today.
Well, and also for you, as a new team, father and son, first Royal Ascot winner and first Queen Anne winner.
Well, yeah. I mean, it took Sadie. I've been second in it 3 times. It took Sadie to get me over the line.
And for having crowd as well, how pleased are you to see that?
Look, it's wonderful. Those people who come and done the tests and come here, it's fantastic. And it's a gorgeous atmosphere because it's not crowded. It's very comfortable. And it's a gorgeous day. So to that extent, full marks to people who made the effort to come.
Any quick questions for on hand? Lee, quickly.
John, you've dangled the possibility of going up in trip with him at some point, maybe at York. Is that still in the back of your mind?
No, he could. You can see how relaxed he is. He cantered down to start like tomorrow would do. So to that extent, Lee, he is in races like the Chabrond International, but he's also in the Sussex. He's also in the Jacquemadoua. So I'll talk to the owner. And we'll work out a plot. But the key thing is see how they are after the race. But all the options are open for him. He'll have no trouble with a mile and a quarter if we wish to go there.
Thank you very
Thanks,
much.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
I love listening to John Gosden in that post-race press conference, courtesy of Lloyd Bell Productions and Rupert Bell. Matter of fact, all of the audio I'm going to play for you, courtesy of those folks, and my thanks to them. I love the line that John Gosden used when he was asked about being nervous about saddling the favorite. And he said, well, you know, I guess you have to be a little bit because the only thing around the corner is the banana peel. What a great way to look at it, right? You've got the favorite. So the only thing that could happen is you could slip on the banana peel and you can get beat. That's the only, you know, that's right around the corner. But fantastic stuff from John Gosden. Congrats to Palace Pier. Frankie Dettori was aboard, and Frankie has had so much success, well, not just at Ascot, but all over the world. And here's what he had to say about his winning ride.
Frankie, many congratulations. First race, first flying dismount, and obviously with the crowd, that looked so ruthlessly efficient as a performance.
Well, you can rely on him, you know, so to have, you know, it's like getting one of the proper guys to take the first penalty and puts in the back of the net. So it was, you know, it's, he's one of the best horses in the world, and you want everything to go right, and everything did go right. I'm just reflecting on 31 years ago when I won my first Royal Ascot in the Queen Anne on Mark Distinction. So much water's gone under the bridge, but I'm still getting the same kick. And yeah, I am pretty relieved that everything went smooth as I thought, and you know, it makes a big difference. We have a lot of, you know, I've got a lot of good rides in the week, and you know, it takes a lot of pressures off.
What is his finest attribute, this horse?
Well, he's the best miler in the world. So he's he goes on any ground, and he's a beautiful looking specimen. He's very kind. He does what you ask him to do. He comes from behind. He can be up there, and yes, he's a great partner for me to have in such a race. So you know, it's not just me. He's the one that should take all the credit.
It was a pretty surreal experience here last year where you were the top jockey again.
Yeah.
How pleased are you that actually people are seeing your knees being tested in the flying
dismount? You can't imagine. You can't imagine. To see the colours, to see the people screaming, and it's a mirage, I'm telling you. I'm so pleased and great. I think I probably need Valium this morning. I was so excited. No, it was great. No, it's fantastic. What can you say? Ascot with people is amazing. And especially for me that Ascot has been part of my life, all the great success that I've had, and now started with this one. Brilliant. I couldn't ask for more.
I couldn't agree with Frankie more. It is great to see fans back at Royal Ascot and at racetracks all across the country and now streaming in around the world too. Certainly welcome, a welcome sight to all of us racing fans who went through 2020 without them. On Wednesday, a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Turf was the Prince of Wales Stakes, and this was a really good performance. Here's how it sounded.
Ryan Moore gives Love a squeeze, asks it a stretch. Sangarius Ordaria, Armory's just tucked in behind Ordaria. Love with the advantage, she's going to have to fight hard. She does respond. Ordaria in second place, laying down a big challenge. Armory to the outside, then Myoberon. Sangarius has wilted. Love is very tenacious. Ordaria won't give in, but Love finding plenty for Ryan Moore. Armory is in third, and Love is coming up to the line. She sends Ascot head over heels. A special filly has won. Love makes all of very tough in the Prince of Wales' Stakes to Ordaria. A terrific race between the two of them.
Two fantastic Ordaria is just absolutely sensational, and the two of them put on quite a show. Love prevailing, the Irish bred, trained by Aidan O'Brien, ridden by Ryan Moore. No surprise there. Now 7-for-11 lifetime and 1-for-1 here in 2021. Love will be on her way to the Breeders' Cup Turf, and I told you about the success that Aidan O'Brien has had in that race. You better take a look at Love if she makes her way to Del Mar in November. Here's what Aidan had to say when he met with the media after the race.
Well, Aidan, how proud are you of this wonderful horse? How tough did she prove once again to be?
Yeah, no, unbelievable, Rupert. We were very a little bit worried coming here today because she was prepared for a few runs and didn't get to run. And to come into a race like this without a run was a big disadvantage. She was vulnerable today at the distance. And then as the race came together, there was no pace in it. So, and going to be vulnerable to making your own run. And so Ryan did a great job balancing and doing enough for her to win and at the same time not doing enough because he knew Armory was going to be coming from the back and he knew he was prepared for the race. So, no, it was brilliant, really. Yeah. Like, he gave her a great ride, delighted with the filly, and listen, it's a pleasure and a privilege to have her.
When you see perhaps with a furlong to go, you think they're all ganging up on her. Did you for a moment think, oh, this may not, but you had faith in her?
Yeah, no, she has all the complete attributes of a Galileo. Like, when you really want them, I knew watching Ryan's body language, the mare was down galloping with her head on the ground and she was only waiting for Ryan really to grind her and say, come on. And I knew when he would do that, she would find for him. And that's exactly what he did, you know. So she was going to go to the ground. She gives all, really, this filly.
And when you see her giving her all, how much satisfaction does that give you to know that this horse just doesn't know the meaning of losing him anyway?
No, and listen, it's an unbelievable trait and probably the most important trait in any thoroughbred. And she has it in spades and multiplied by 10, you know. So she gives everything. Like, there's nothing left, nothing spared. Like, whatever you want, she's there to answer it all the time, really.
And are you aware that's your 75th Royal Ascot winner? No, it's not bad by any standards.
No, it's a privilege, and we're in a very privileged position and feel very privileged to be in the position. Like I say, we're a small part of a big team, and so very grateful to everybody for everything.
Small part, yes, I know. Anyway, but what are you doing with Love now? Because you see that, you know that she's still relishing the game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The lads will decide what they want to do. What usually happens, we take her home, see how she is. Obviously, she has all the options, the King George, an Eclipse, all those kind of races. Like, obviously, you'd think hard about the King George, you'd see how she is. If the ground was nice, high summer, after being around the track here. And listen, but the lads will make the decision close and we see how she's after 10 days, but they're the type of races that so really suit her.
So when you're writing the report, what are you going to say that the lads should do?
Have I know, I don't. I really read the reports that the lads write, really. So so listen, we'll see how she comes out of it. And there's no doubt she has to be definitely in the reckoning for a King George, but we'll see it shortly.
Well, it was a joy to see her today. Well done. There may be some questions now. Yeah. Anyone here got any questions for Aidan? Can you speak into the microphone?
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
I think that's you've equaled Sir Henry Cecil's number of 75. Presumably he was a figure that you admired from afar when you were a younger man making your way in this sport.
Oh, unbelievable, David. Absolutely. I remember Sir Henry won the Oaks that we were in Epsom with, I think, for Marie and Electra Nearchus, and I remember meeting him. He was an unbelievable man, really. And the presence that he had when he walked into the parade ring and when we started training, and you know, like, we felt so privileged to meet him, really, even to meet the man, you know. So incredible, really.
Is there a possibility that this filly could meet with a snowfall in the second half of the season or in the closing months?
Yeah, it could, David. Obviously, they're the lads' fillies and they'll decide. But I think at the moment, the Irish Oaks is a possible for snowfall at the moment. But that could change whatever they decide. And this filly, if everything went well, she could be a possible for the King George. So, but like obviously, if they decide to do that, like it would be unbelievable, and we'd be delighted really.
Because there was talk with Snowfall about going against her elders, but you're happy to stay against three-year-olds at the current app.
Well, I'm not sure, David, that will happen, but that's what I just thought, that it would be a nice option for when we don't have to go up, you know, and the time will come when we do have to go up. And which is great, the lads are very happy to keep their fillies in training, which makes it very exciting for us. So I thought, like, obviously, mind them as much this year and hopefully prepare them for next year. But like the time will come when they'll have to meet her. She'll have to go again, elders. But I thought at the moment that's what they might be thinking. But listen, the lads make their mind up kind of close to the races themselves, David, really.
I've got a question on Zoom.
Ideally, is she a mile and a half horse? Would you have felt a bit happy today if it had been a mile and a half?
I think she's very happy at a mile and a half, but like as we saw today, like a mile and a quarter is no problem to run. She probably would even be better with a lead over a mile and a quarter, where she wouldn't have to do her own donkey work. I wouldn't say she's stuck to the ground, and I'd say she's very versatile, really. Listen, she's a guineas winner, Mike, so that's what we can't forget. So when you have a filly that can win a guineas, like she's not short of speed, I'd say she's very versatile. But if she decided to come back to the mile and a half for the King George here, she's after having a kind of a mile and a quarter run around the track. So I'd say gets a mile and a half, but a mile and a quarter, she's very happy with it too, Mike, I think.
And also, how much will she come on for this, Aidan?
And Mike, I think she'll come on a bit. We were afraid that she'd take a blow today, and she did. Her first run is the first time that she was kind of really asked to stretch since last year. So she's definitely going to have to come on a nice bit, I would imagine.
Thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure, Mike. Thank you.
I think that's it. Thank you very much, Aidan. Sorry, there's one more coming in. Sorry.
You've trained some really special horses down the years. Love's now won two classics, another two group ones since that. You know, could she reach the heights of some of those greats over the last decade or so?
I think she could. I think she's fresh now, and probably to her advantage, she hasn't had the miles in that bad ground early on in the year, which can often affect them late. So I think she's probably had an ideal preparation for into the summer and into the autumn. She's very versatile. Mm. She's very genuine. I'd say anything is possible with her now, I think. You know, so I'm kind of delighted that we didn't run her in the background now, because you'd be after putting miles on her clock and for not a lot of a gain, if you know what I mean.
Brilliant. Thank you, Adam.
Pleasure.
That's Aidan O'Brien, winning trainer of Love and the Prince of Wales at Ascot on Wednesday. Continuing to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup, looking back on the three Breeders' Cup winning your in races at Royal Ascot this past week. One more. That was on Thursday. June 17th, and it was the Norfolk Stakes, and it was a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint, and here's how it went.
Heading down to the two marker, and as they do so, the light blue cap towards the right is Lucci showing in front there. Over on the far side, Go Bears Go to Corker Nakatomi, and a right on the far side, Catamosto there with a chance. Mere side, Kunan, Twilight Jet are trying to challenge Lucci, and behind those in the black and yellow Project Dante, wide across the course, here's Perfect Power as well as they hit the line tight. Perfect Power.
Perfect Power in the Norfolk Stakes on Thursday, winning that one, heading to the Juvenile Turf Sprint, and it was an emotional win for jockey Paul Hannigan.
Well, Paul, I think there are winners that mean a lot, and this just might mean a lot. It's been a long road back, but now you're back in a Royal Ascot winner's enclosure.
Yeah, I think this tops the lot, Rupert. Yeah, as I said previously, the accident I had last year was a pretty bad one. And I just thought I'm lucky to be here at all, never mind riding winners here. So I'm forever grateful, yeah.
And it must have been quite an anxious wait with that photograph. Did you think you'd done it? I mean, no one quite knew, with it being the length of breath. What was it adding to the tension as far as you were concerned?
I must have asked about 10 jockeys pulling up who won, but I wasn't quite sure because it was so far away the other side, wasn't it? But I think the way I finished the race, I had every chance because he really powered home.
Were you confident beforehand that this horse, a couple of runs, shaping up well, but could cope with what was going to be a tough, fast race?
Well, I thought we'd have a chance because he's got such a good temperament. And I think he takes it all in, which I think you really need at Ascot. There was a few down there getting very warm and agitated, but he was very, very laid back.
And when you're on your long road back, okay, we've all had the COVID, and when it just happened before, did you ever think, I'm never getting back on a horse again? Was there a time when this felt it was a long, long road back?
Yeah, I think early on when I was laying in hospital, you know, that was, I thought I'm in trouble. And it was only through the rehab and the genuine kindness of people with their help that I've got back. And I can't appreciate, you know, enough. So, yeah, I just appreciate it when you get a second chance, you know.
And this is the ultimate. And to have it in front of crowds, it feels normal, doesn't it?
So nice to see the crowd back, isn't it? You know, and what a buzz that was. Eventually, when I found out I won. But the cheer of the crowd, you know, was something special there, yeah.
Well, we're all very pleased that you're back in the winner's enclosure here. That's enough from me. Any questions here?
We could see pulling up, Paul, the emotion on your face. And like you said, that was probably tops the lot. I mean, you've been champion jockey, but to experience this kind of emotion after such a setback, can you kind of put it in perspective through your other achievements?
This would be the main one now because, as I say, I didn't think I would get back at all. Obviously, it was a bad one. I fractured my T3, T4 and T6, and the T6 was properly crushed altogether. So after operations and physio of countless days, being in a few dark places sometimes, that, you know, to make it back and to ride a winner here would be top the whole lot. Yeah, yeah.
What was it then that gave you the inspiration to keep going? Because it would have been obviously the easier thing to do to say, well, I've had a great career, but now my future's a different one. What made you carry on?
You know, luckily enough, I'm very good friends with Freddie Tillicky, and I realise what he's been through, and he's kind of been my inspiration as well, because he wasn't as lucky as me, and I found great inspiration from him, having to get, you know, I've got a second chance, and it just didn't happen for Freddie, and I just really appreciate that chance that I've got.
Just quickly, Paul, for Richard Fahey as well, who's kind of been a constant throughout your career, to do it for him, yeah, must give you extra satisfaction.
Yeah, there's not many times I get emotional when I give Richard a shake of the hand and a hug, but I think he's seen it on my face, so I'm glad I wasn't in tears. He probably would have given me a bit of Mickey taking for a long while, so I just about held it together.
Oh, welcome back, jockey Paul Hannigan. What a great story that is. Winner of the Norfolk Stakes on Thursday at Royal Ascot aboard Perfect Power, and now punches his ticket to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint in November. One more win in your in race coming up in just a little bit, the Diamond Jubilee Stakes, which is a win in your in for the Turf Sprint. That takes place shortly at Royal Ascot. And again, my thanks to Lloyd Bell Productions and Rupert Vell for providing all of that audio that you just heard here in this Road to the Breeders' Cup segment. One more Breeders' Cup note. It was announced this week that the Breeders' Cup will indeed open to full seating capacity when the Breeders' Cup returns to Del Mar in November. That is great news, and we can't wait for November to roll around and get there for the Breeders' Cup in Southern California. I'll be back to wrap this one up right after these messages on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events. Gainsway Stallion Tappet, America's most dominant sire with over 80 Graded Stakes winners and more lifetime Grade 1 winners than any sire in the nation. Recent stars include multiple stakes winner and Grade 1 victorist Valiance.
Valiance with the lead. Ollie's Candy trying. Valiance prevails by 3/4 of a length in the Judmont Spinster. And 2-year-old sensation Essential Quality, winner of the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Final furlong of the Juvenile. Essential Quality coming forward for the lead. Late run from Keep Me In Mind. Hot Rod Charlie to the inside. Essential Quality and Luis Saez have won the TVG Breeders' Cup Juvenile. In the sales ring, his yearlings topped both opening sessions of Keeneland September, including the $2 million sale topper. A breed shaper, a dream maker. Tappet, standing at Gainsway.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology.
Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Fans, don't miss the final 2 days of Santa Anita's Winter Spring Meet this Saturday and Sunday. With just 2 days to go, we'll have 4 stakes each day. On Saturday, the 81st running of the Grade 3 $100,000 San Juan Campestrano, which will be contested at a mile and three quarters on turf, will be accompanied by the $150,000 Snow Chief, the $150,000 Malair, and the $75,000 Siren Lure. Don't miss a minute of the action. Make your reservations now at santaanita.com/open. On closing day Sunday, we'll have mandatory payouts in all exotic wagers, including the 20-cent Rainbow Pick 6 jackpot, and we'll have 4 outstanding stakes, the Grade 3 Wilshire, the Grade 3 American, and a pair of $100,000 stakes for 2-year-olds at 5 furlongs, the Fassig Tipton Debutante and the Fassig Tipton Futurity. First race post time on Saturday and Sunday will be at 1 o'clock. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, I need to say a special thank you to Charles from Mississippi. If you listen to our BristNet.com call-in show every week, you know Charles. He sent me a couple of beautiful books. He knows I'm an outdoorsman. A couple of great books there. So, Charles, appreciate it, buddy. He says he's a faithful listener. I know he is. And really appreciate you for that gift, and really appreciate you being with us on the Horse Racing Radio Network. My thanks to all of our guests who made this show possible this morning, and to all of you for tuning in and chiming in on this Father's Day edition poll question that we ran on our social media. For my producer, Lee Delapina, for Chauncey handling all of our social media, really appreciate them and all their help. Happy Father's Day to all the dads in HRN Nation. Go Steelers, and let's do it. Go Phil.